Blog Talk Radio.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
We'll be right back.
Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Psychic Journeyman here on Psychic Journeyman Talk Radio here on Block Talk Radio. Welcome to the show. Tuesdays we call this the Missing Spiritual Link Tuesday, where we talk about Atlantis and that kind of stuff, and go over theories and formats and go through connections and that kind of stuff of putting things together, trying to get some people insights about what they think about Atlantis themselves too. So please call in your opinions and insights, and maybe you've had some past life experiences and that kind of too, because we're doing free readings tonight too as well, but we're also going to do some past life readings too. Also, for the 10th caller who calls in tonight, you will win a 45-minute reading. So join us for the fun and for a great show. And I'd like to also introduce my lovely co-host, Bree. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, and how are you?
Good question. I think I'm going to have a good answer one of these days. Anyway.
One of these days.
One of these days, yeah. Might be tomorrow. You never know. You never know. So with the situation of Atlantis and that kind of stuff, I'm sure you've heard about Atlantis yourself and that kind of thing. You ever thought about it in the point of having your own opinion about it?
Well, I've been reading up on it, and I really do believe that it's true. It's not.
Yeah, because we're sitting here looking. I saw some things I was looking today, and like I said, everybody go check out the movie Atlantis, The Lost Empire, which is basically a movie that came out, I think. It's kind of freaking me out when I sit here and looked at this thing, that this movie actually came out in 2001. I didn't realize it was that long ago. And there was also a movie back in 1961 called Atlantis, The Lost Continent. Something like that. I was actually looking at some of the film clips from the whole thing. And I think it's kind of funny to look at these things back in the old days, too, when they did these movies. And I'd say old days, because I was actually born in 1961. But I was there to look at this thing, and actually the people who created this movie were actually the ones who also put together, like, War of the Worlds, the original movie. There was a movie out there called Time Machine, the original one. And there was also another movie called When Worlds Collide, and that was it. I actually saw that movie, too. And this thing was called Atlantis, the Lost Continent. Now, how it works is they put, like, you have the continent of Europe and North America, and right in between, the Atlantic Ocean, they say the Atlantic Ocean should not be as big as it is. There should be a land mass in there, too. And with all the research they've done, they realize there was a continent there that either it sank. In this movie, it's kind of cool to watch this movie, because they do explore the idea about crystals. And they actually have a laboratory with ray, but they have a death ray and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay. And it's more on the line of, how would you put this? It also, I read one article where it talks about they had a great army and just all this stuff, you know. And I was sitting there looking at these pictures and looking at these clips and pictures and stuff and people's theories. I'm just like, wow, I just feel like they really got it wrong. There's bits and pieces here and there. If you took them all to put them together, you might actually get the idea of the format and that kind of stuff, because it depicts them as And then they have a new movie coming out called it's called Thor, and basically Thor comes from, he's one of the northern gods, and the northern gods actually were more like the idea of what I'm talking about, because it was like the idea of science and magic, but they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very evolved, but they don't have to have the ideal. Because they got this thing here where you look at the situation where they have this ray and this guy's zapping people because they're leaving the continent. You know, and it's like the ideal looking at the situation of chaos that was going on and that kind of thing. That some people left. They didn't leave as Atlantis was being destroyed. We left several days before it even happened. That intuitive intuitional guidance, whatever you want to call it. Some people stuck to it, and some people got away from it, but the ones who didn't had no problem of using it and getting away from the situation.
Yeah.
Whew. Oh, well. It has some nice pictures on all the thing. I wish I could actually get a couple of these things and put them on the thing. I'm not really good at the computer either. I just have a very good advanced computer, so it helps me out more. But there's actually, there's a picture that you can Google. It says, it's called I Found Atlantis on Google Earth 4.0. And basically what it is, I'm trying to, it shows that, this would make sense with a lot of things I saw too, where people were thinking, when you look at the continent itself, it's in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's actually like having like, well, if you've seen pictures of England and the English Channel and the water it has around it and how close it is to the landmass, but not quite there, you know, mm-hmm. and having a landmass in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean where you have that on both sides. I mean, it's a nice little journey, but it's not a big journey. So it'd be like walking across Florida. If you look at Florida and look at the distance between the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, it's not really that far. You take the same kind of diameters and you put it on the continent, which is inside of the Atlantis itself. So we have the mass and we have the island. And then I was sort of focusing on these other what do you call them? Oh, shoot. These other outposts of Atlantis, so you could actually see one in the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, or actually between Florida. Well, right in that little area. You got the Bermuda Triangle, right in that little area. And then this would change things a lot on everything a little bit, because if you have the main island of Atlantis, which is in the middle between Europe and North America, then people start talking about, you said the main palace and that kind of stuff was in the Mediterranean. Well, just because we have a huge continent doesn't mean they built everything in the middle of it.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And even scientists are starting to wonder. I mean, there's people who are talking and wondering about the situation, where they're starting to go, okay, Atlantis. Was this the actual name, or was it something that was given to it because of where it was supposed to be at, which was in the Atlantic Ocean? And actually, if you look at Atlantis, the word itself, it's more of a word of meaning ocean, but not particularly the Atlantic Ocean. It's not named after the Atlantic Ocean. There's no connection, really. There isn't. Atlantis is more of a word that means underwater. How would you put this? I'm trying to get the definition right on the whole thing, because Atlantis is not, you know, if you look at the name itself, it basically talks about a society. It doesn't talk about a continent. And there's actually some books that were written back in the day were called The Lost City of Atlantis. And then it became The Lost Continent of Atlantis. So there's been different variations in the whole thing. So you can see why it kind of gets pulled off to four or five different directions, because there's so many people and so many theories that people are just trying to take bits and pieces and, you know, try to make sense of it. And that's what they're having problems with. And with some of the places you actually want to go look, like the Mediterranean and places like that, some places you don't have the luxury of just going under the ocean and going exploring without getting arrested. So that can actually put a little thing in there. So you said you were doing some research too yourself and that kind of stuff. So what'd you come up with? Good question.
Yeah, I just read a lot, so it's where did I start?
Mm-hmm. Well, even with this situation of this thing here, because they were sitting there talking about looking at the Earth, and then if you look at the Earth and you look at North America and Europe, right in between here, you know, you have the groove. If you look at North America, you have that little groove right there, which you have Florida down at the tip, and then over here on this one side, you have Africa and Europe and the whole thing right in there. So go down approximately more down toward the, if you see Florida, between Florida and the coast of Africa, right in there, you will find the continent. And it's like you look at the situation, and if you put all the continents together, you would definitely see that there's a piece here missing. But it could go back and forth. I mean, look, the situation could be these islands, all these things. Right now, we have these great oceans. So can we really say that there's actually something missing or something sank or something like that? Or is it just a natural formation that happened? Because they were sort of, they found some things where it shadows off, where there's things closer to the coast of Africa. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when I came up with my theory of having like five or six outposts, it would actually fall right in the line with that, because we have the main continent here in the middle. And then if you look at the situation, if you ventured out into five or six different directions, first part would go toward Africa, where Egypt is. Then you'd have one coast, you'd have one people going over here to the Gulf of Mexico to start their outpost. Then you go down further down this way, you have China. If you go down further enough, you know, China's on the other side right here. So you can see they can all expand from that one spot. And people have come up with a theory too that Atlantis, the city and the palace, wasn't in the middle of this continent. It was actually more closer to the coast of Africa. Now, if you have to go up to the top here, you see that you can go right in there where Spain and England and all those guys are, and go right into the Mediterranean Sea. Okay? We could also sort of look at the situation and find this main continent. Because there's a lot of people who have not really connected this great continent that was there and the city of Atlantis itself. Not saying they're not. I'm just saying, you know, you put those are theories too. To put those two together. My theory was it could be definitely the continent did exist. A lot of population here. But at the same time, the main palace was in the Mediterranean. And then we have these outposts here on the sides and that kind of stuff, and things going on, and people living in certain ways who are not part of the masses. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So it's like, I found Atlantis. They say they found Atlantis. But see, I don't think people understand Atlantis. Is there is a center, and there is a core to Atlantis, but itself. But when you look, I've always sat here and looked at this theory, which every time I look around, I can find evidence everywhere I go. In India, to talk about the magic carpet, we talked about this before, about magic carpet, right? You know. Picture somebody riding on some kind of mechanical device that these people would see as a carpet. Indian people, they have this thing about their Persian rugs and that kind of stuff, so why would they not put the connection together? Sorry about that, I was getting a drink of water.
Now, I was reading up, and some say that was an earthquake that sunk it, and some are saying that was a tsunami.
Well, see, the one thing sometimes I really get freaked out with these theories, because people don't put it in consideration. They want to sit there and figure out, because we were sitting talking about the other day when we sit there going, okay, you got an outpost from Atlantis that sprung off from Atlantis. It's in the Gulf of Mexico. Then we have the other one over here, which is right, you know, it's closer to the tip of Florida, but it's more tipping into the blue, because I always see the blue waters. And if you've ever been down to Florida on the Gulf Coast is very blue, okay? When you go to the Atlantic Ocean, it's very muddy and very dark water. You don't have the blue waters until you get closer down to the tip. Now, every visions I've ever seen working with people and that kind of stuff with past lives, I've always seen blue waters. So my theory is more into the Gulf of Mexico where I see this outpost. The same thing when I was looking at the situation over here with the Loch Ness Monster in Ireland and Scotland. You know, I feel like there was an outpost there too, but more closer to Australia. So we have three. That's two. Then we have one down by China. That's three. One by Japan, that's four, you know? Now you sit and take another outpost, which could be the things I've been seeing is number five is actually the people who went to Egypt and basically helped those people create that big empire. Okay, that's five. And then we have six, which we go with the Mayas, which was a great empire too, which had pyramids. there's like three cultures I know of for that do have pyramids and that kind of stuff. And then the one we saw in Japan, they've actually had this thing, and I've seen pictures of this pyramid and what's there too as well. And people are saying it's just a water formation, erosion, that kind of stuff. But when you see this thing, it's got definite looks like walking paths, and looks like someone's actually taken and carved out of the rock itself. You got some really strong points there. But, you know, kind of squarish, let's put it that way, where it looks like someone's cut that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we sit here and put all this together. So when people talk about the tsunamis and tsunamis, those earthquakes, volcano, this is what happens if you're in the Mediterranean and you see this volcano, and we're talking about the island of Crates, where I feel like the original palace was. And every time I've looked at that place, I can see the pictures of Atlantis, where we have, let me see this here real quick. I can pull this up. This is kind of a, okay, that's the wrong one. All right. I'm trying to pull up this one map real quick here. All right. Atlantis is like this, okay? The main one, the main palace. The main palace was in the middle, up on a mound, but more flatter than what I've seen, okay? And then you have a ring. Now, you got to imagine these rings, okay? When you see these walls, these gates are about the size. If anybody's ever seen the picture of the Panama Canal and the locks that are in that whole thing, okay, now picture these, but more like the Panama Canal as it is, but wrapped around an island, and three Panama Canals wrapped around an island with water between each one of them. With also bridges connecting everything. So you have a bridge that can go out of Atlantis, but you also have a waterway that also goes out of Atlantis. So when you take the waterway back, take the waterway in, you have these gates, each section to get to the palace. Okay? Now we're talking about people back in the day too, who, as they were evolving their culture, were attacked by certain primitives that were in the backgrounds here. Okay? So as Atlantis was established, what happened was we have the inside palace and the first wall. As we progressed, you'll sit there and see that the next wall is a different color. That was a different king. And then the third one on the outer edge was another extended two. It's almost really challenging to get to the palace. Why do we have these things for in the first place? Is because when you look at the situation of the mound and the palace itself, it's like looking at this, okay? When you get to the palace, there's a way to go down into the ground underneath. This is all man-made. The water wakes. So we're thinking, yeah, I'm trying to get to the measurements here, but give you an ideal. Take a look at Stonehenge, and you have the stones in the middle, and then you have an inner wall and an outer wall. And all you do in those situations is you add a third, almost the same kind of size, and then you take Stonehenge itself. Say, imagine Stonehenge is in the ground. Now imagine there's water on the outside of Stonehenge. There's water in between the two. The second and the third wall, and then you have additional water on the end that most people would probably call a moat around a palace, and then you have the palace itself, which is the main part, which is those rocks you would see in the inside of Stonehenge. Okay, but that's more of a representation of the palace itself. Okay, and see, this is the whole thing. Why would people leave Atlantis with this kind of protection? Plus, they also had protection of underground, very advanced people. They realized that they had a lot of things working with nature, even with the ideal of the outpost. Now, when you look at this picture, you'll see these little things in front. They look like little stones, but actually what they are, they're houses.
Oh.
Yeah, because you look at the whole thing, like you see these little things here, and it's like looking at farmers now, how they raise their... Well, they have cows. Well, not cows, but... Well, cows. But Atlanteans were more into agriculture. So we had cornfields, wheat fields. There was also kind of things that you didn't know about. a certain it's like a mixture between a corn and a bean. That's all I can describe it as. It was even said, this, I read this one article too, this was kind of cool, because if you look at the ideal of around the time Atlantis was, and to get the ideal of how massive this culture was, is to realize that, like looking at a picture, and you see these little squares where they have the aquaculture, we have people around the outer edge and up and down the waterway, but you also have a bridge going out to the right, and there was actually, oh, here it is, and a bridge going out to the left. Now, there was also a bridge going out the back part, too. These are going to, like most of us call, suburbs of other parts of Atlantis, too. But all this stuff that you see is very flat. When this whole thing started, was not flat. This was, you see mountains in the background. So it's more of this thing, you see this mound where the palace is at. It was actually part of a great mountain that they actually leveled, okay? We have a volcano in the background. As the disruption here happened, we also have, what I was talking about before, is the idea all these people on the outside and outer edges can come in where the palace is, in this outer edge wall, and you'll see that there's, they look like little, I don't know, what do you call those things that farmers put corn in? Silos. They look like little silos, okay? These are actually air vents of underground caverns that in case of chaos, let's say that we have an enemy attacking here, which pretty much didn't happen there for a while because there wasn't really a lot of people that were even power enough to even think about it, but it was more of a nature thing, like if you had any kind of storms or kind of like stuff, everybody would go to the palace, go in into the underground. There was actually, when you look at the idea of Atlantis on top, what you see on top, imagine something on the same format but underneath the ground, underneath this great palace. So therefore, when things happened, they would go under the ground, and that's where, and the place was made out just like it was on the top, so everybody could live and survive. And depending on how long this catastrophe was going on, you want to survive, so you have to learn how to outlive that. And they were pretty good at that whole thing. So we have a subculture underneath all here. We're talking about anything you could grow, mushrooms and that kind of stuff. There were certain things on the side here. It's amazing how some of these things were formatted, some of the stones that they put down there and crystals and that kind of stuff for energy and light and that kind of stuff. And if some people would see this stuff, the idea of understanding this civilization, why did it disappear? When it would probably put you in the theory of thinking it to yourself, you would have a hard time believing that they actually did disappear, and then some people have a hard time believing they actually existed because of the advancements they had and that kind of thing. And we could call them advancement, but they call it living. It was just easier to come along these situations because being in the right place at the right time, these things just kind of fell in your lap, you know? Crystals, it was a cavern of crystals, and you have a lot of people that have the time to focus. I mean, it's like looking at Atlanteans and go, okay, Atlantis, if it was only around for 11,000 years, you had people that were living well over 800-900 years old. So when you have that kind of thing going on, you have time to sit there and focus on technology and that kind of stuff. You don't worry about it. I only got 60 years to live, and you can do all this kind of craziness. Even with the situation of handicaps and that kind of stuff, there was just the idea of intense healing and those kind of stuff, and they could basically overcome all those things. So you would get to this culture and see, okay, they don't have anything like we have today, anything like that. But doesn't mean they didn't. They just had they learned from the experiences to get past all that stuff. Just like we try to do in our culture, but we have a bad habit of letting money dictate directional choices. When we should be focusing on whatever it takes to overcome the obstacles and do that kind of thing, which in the first part of the century, I think, is what was going on. Now we're so caught up in the freaking thing of making a dime or making a dollar that we have a tendency to hold on to technology. Not the idea of it hasn't been invented or doesn't exist. It's the idea of hanging on to it. There was a very situation that we've picked up on where, how would you put this? Some things that come to the light where you go to a doctor and the doctor said there's no cure for this. When actually the truth was there was a cure. It didn't exist in this country because the FDA would not approve it. And I found this out too, that the FDA does not approve things that don't have side effects. So it has to have some kind of side effect or they won't approve it because they feel like if you don't, I guess that's the key to them to that it might not be real. Don't go any further with the technology to see if it is real. It's just that the first thing they see. If it doesn't have a side effect, then it can't be anything good because everything has anything to do with curing cancer or something like that. They all have side effects, which is kind of like a human concept to look at that narrow-mindedly instead of looking at situations that there could be cures out there, real cures, not things that mask thing, to get past all that kind of stuff. So we sit back and look at the idea of why people get pulled back to a certain culture or that kind of thing, because there's more to it than what we think. It wasn't a warlike thing of them taking themselves out because of being arrogant and mean and cruel and misusing their powers. I think it was in the sense of the word of somebody, as we always have in certain cultures, which we see this all the time in movies and comic books and that kind of stuff, there's always a foe. There's always somebody who wants to exploit it. So in the situation here, we always say one man can't do nothing by himself, but then we find out that if you really look in history and that kind of stuff, that's not true. One man can actually get in and really do some damage or do some good. So what do we come up with this crap? history backs it up. So that kind of thing. So I'm just putting over a situation of... So we look at the situation of Atlantis and say, okay, these people didn't hold anything back, and they focused on just that. We have a problem, so how can we solve it?
Yeah.
The idea of money and that kind of stuff, there was no such thing as money. So there was no something that they focused on that they wanted to obtain. They wanted to obtain it all. They saw a situation or a person, that kind of stuff, and put their efforts and energy and focus on that. And then once you work with that, and I don't care what anybody says, you see a lot of technology out there, but I still think it's primitive, which I feel like there's more to it, or there's more there that they're not sharing with us. And I do believe it's kind of crazy when you have people in power who think they know better because they got there. I'm like, okay, but how'd you get there? You were elected by the people that you're saying that don't know what they're talking about. So it's another contradiction. Take a deep breath, and it's a good. So I'm just saying, I saw these five outposts, and the ones I saw was in Iceland and the Gulf of Mexico, which is actually more tip of Florida. I saw the other one in China, Japan, and actually it was Australia. There are influences, but not a lot of connections to Ireland. Even though the ideal of Atlanteans and the influence could be there, it's just that the ideal, what I'm talking about, is these outposts, of this great civilization. Okay, so we have people that can be wandering in these places and exploring. You know, we know for a fact from the things we've actually done ourselves and archaeology and that kind of stuff that we do like to explore, and mysteries are intriguing to us. There's always been mysteries and that kind of stuff everywhere and every timeline. So the Atlanteans were just the same way as we was too as well, but they just took more time to develop things and they didn't throw them out there because their motivation wasn't money. Their motivation was humanity. It was their fellow man. It was cures to help people that were in certain situations, people who were, as they call it, damaged in some sense of the word, was the ideal of correcting that and turning it around and that kind of thing. I think it's one reason I'm kind of like really drawn to Star Trek, because Star Trek is almost like evolution and getting past what we're through now to get back to Atlanteans who are actually that's why I see more or less Atlanteans and starships. because what they do is they focus on their gifts, their service, and it doesn't matter about the money and that kind of stuff. So they've toned everything else down, but they've also created technology that basically can pull things. It's like taking energy, putting it into a machine, and then like a little transporter. You pull this energy into the machine, it goes through what's been programmed into it to create just that. And that's what we call manifestation, but that's a mechanical way of doing it. But when you come up with those kind of things, and you can actually manufacture things almost unlimitedly, then you don't have this thing that's called, you know, supply and demand, because you can do it all yourself. Now, there are people out there that are on the other land of more of artists, you know, putting a lot more energy into architecture and those kind of things, and really doing gifts, you know, art, that kind of stuff, paintings, those kind of things. So there's going to be a market for those. So there's ways of making money. But see, people don't realize the ideal of this freaking crazy train we're on right now is the ideal. What do we make money for? To live. Now, if everything was supplied for you and you could live spontaneously, then you wouldn't need money. But money's a good concept in itself, because it's a spiritual concept. It's an exchange, which means it's a giving receiving concept. So it's definitely a spiritual concept. I know we're trying to consider and go over some things here, but you know, you said you went over some technology with Atlantis too, and some things you've read. Do you have anything you want to share with us? I think you do. So go right ahead. Don't be shy. It's like one of those things that going, I have a little bit insight that most people don't, which is what I see in visions and stuff like that, and I place them, put them all together and that kind of stuff. But still, with some of the research that you've done, you know, it's all valid. Mm-hmm. I just want to hear some of it, because it's like it helps me to focus more on the visualizations and putting the other pieces in there that are not there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I've seen you as a very intelligent woman. When you focus on things, you can really pull something out of something. So, just all ears. Just wing it out there. Just, hey, I found this. I'm pretty sure as you was looking through all this stuff that something really struck a chord with you too as well, right?
Well. There's a lot that did. Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, with the situation in hand, when I started really looking into this thing, it was the idea of how things struck me as not quite right. So they started, you know, so what I did pick up on and what I did see, and the research that I did strike some things within myself. And I've always seen you as a very, you're very gifted yourself with your abilities. So I was just wondering, as you were looking through these things, what came to you? Go ahead. Inquiring minds want to know.
All right, you're going to have to help me out a little.
Okay, no problem.
Please.
Whatever you want. Just kind of put it out there and that kind of stuff. And if I can help you fill in the blanks, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
That's going to make it easier for you, okay? The lost continent of Atlantis. I was actually trying to find, because I feel like the word Atlantis means something, okay? It's saying the ideal of a lost but highly advanced civilization has captured the interest of people for centuries. Perhaps the most compelling of these tales is the story of Atlantis, which also falls in the same category as the city of Troy. Okay, we have the city of Troy, but there's other cultures out there too. Even Pompeii is more intriguing with people because how it just disappeared overnight. So what a lot of people do is they take Atlantis and Pompeii and put them together. And what I was trying to answer your question was, when a volcano erupts, you have earthquakes. You have tsunami.
Yeah.
So therefore, it might not be one or the other. It may be all the above. So, So the story of Atlantis, the lost continent of Atlantis, started in 355 BC with the Greek philosopher Plato that we all know about. Plato had planned to write a trilogy. A trilogy of books discussing the nature of man, the creation of the world, and the story of Atlantis, as well as other subjects. Only the first book was ever completed. The second book was abandoned part way through, and the final book was never even started. Plato used dialogue to express his ideals. In this type of writing, the author's thoughts are explored in a series of arguments and debates between various characters in the story. So you have some difference there because you have a story, but you have a lot of opinions. Okay, so Plato often used real people in his dialogue, such as teachers, Socrates, politicians. But the words he gave them were his own. So we have a story, and we have a lot of titles and that kind of stuff, but a lot of things that are put in there are his words. So with Plato's book, Timaeus, a character named Christofferson, but that's not right. That's actually a singer, an actor. I'm going to say it was Kisterius. Kursas, which we have a lot of Sirises and that kind of stuff in Greek languages anyway. He tells the account of Atlantis that has been in his family of generations. According to the characters, the story was originally told to and his ancestor, Solon, by a priest during Solon's visit to Egypt. When we sit here and look at the story of Plato and how the story unfolded and that kind of stuff, there's many years between that. So we have somebody who gave him the story from somebody who got the story. But a lot of people do agree with one thing, and I've seen this too. I've actually focused a lot, where I do see that me personally, I feel like from the things I've worked with and some of the things that come to me, that the story of Atlantis did originate from Egypt, because I don't see any other intersect there. What I mean by that is all the things I've, like past life reading and stuff I've done for people, and plus when these things come to me, it's almost like being pulled back there myself, because I felt like I was Atlantean myself. So when we sit there and pull back and look at these things, I start seeing visions and stuff of me living there. So that's why I'm getting the connection with. So I feel like Egypt is basically where a lot of things started after Atlantis pretty much ceased to exist. And Atlantis didn't stop. It didn't cease to exist because it didn't exist anymore. It's just the ideal, almost like instead of being very bold and telling everybody about themselves, they went the other direction and started being very out of the picture. I don't want, basically saying we want to live, we want to survive, we want to be and do who we are. But I think the only way we can do that is to take ourselves out of history. Okay, because Egyptians, if you really look at the culture, they really try to emphasize on how things really were. No matter how you interpret it, and no matter what you see, they're going to sit there and say, no. this is the way it was, this is what happened, that kind of stuff. And I just, you know, it doesn't resonate with me at all. It really does not. So when I see those kind of things, I start thinking about them. Someone's trying to divert me from the truth, then that can be a problem. And we're doing readings here, guys. We've got an hour and 7 minutes, so if you want to call and get a reading or past life reading, or maybe you want to see if you're Atlantean and that kind of thing, please call us here at 646-721-9031. Let's take a look in the chat room, see if anybody's killing anybody. Well, we've got a full house. Whoa. Okay, I'm just joking. Here, get them again, and again, talking about again, and again. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was almost tempted to say, yes, you should go get some people. Go to the masses. Yes, go to the people. Oh, shit, I spelled people wrong. And bring them. And bring them. Okay. Well, we have one. Okay, Baby Benz is here. A lot of times we get people, I don't know if you notice this, the first part of the week, you usually get a lot of people the first hour, second hour. So, hey, we're going to have a great time. If you say we're not, I tell you wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, we have somebody in the queue. I don't know if they want to talk to us, but let's talk to them, and maybe they might want to talk to, maybe they want to talk to you. What do you think we should do? Should we go and talk to the person in the queue? Should we keep talking to you? What do you think we should do? We could go in here for long, so. Don't cry and go boo-hoo.
Okay.
I'm going to sit here and say there's somebody in the queue with the area code 901. If you want to come on and talk to us and ask a couple questions and that kind of thing, please push 1 so I can see that you have your hand up so I can bring you on. If you're okay, no one's listening. Okay, maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're just listening. Anyway, yeah, I got this whole thing pulled up here, and I was like going over some charts and stuff, and it was amazing what I did find. That you can get a straight talk phone for $30. Yeah, and it's got 1,000 texts. You can get 1,000 texts, 1,000 minutes, and 411s. No extra charge. Kind of crazy, huh? Yeah. We're sitting here doing a commercial for Straight Talk, so if you want to get a Straight Talk phone, I recommend you go to straighttalk.com and check out their phones and stuff like that. Got some great plans. I actually got one of their phones. It was a nice slide phone, and I got the plan and the phone and everything. It only cost me $55, and this was a great deal, but you can only get it on... it's one of those internet deals. So if you go to Walmart, guy, where we're at, Walmart does not really have a selection. You're pretty much limited to what you got to get, but I always say, why don't you go on the internet, take a look at the phones and that kind of thing, and guess what you're going to get? What you want. Because yeah, you can get the whole source bin on there and that kind of thing. So, Bree, have you gone on Straight Talk and kind of looked on there and said, okay, if I could get one of these phones, what phone would I get and what plan would I get?
Well, I've never been to the site, but I've heard from people and how awesome it is, and that I need to get one. And
yeah, you definitely need to get one because my friend, the one thing she said she likes about her phone, and she lives in Tennessee, and she lives in a really rural place too. And she said the one thing she likes about her phone is she gets service no matter where she goes.
Oh,
she
really?
Said, yeah, she said she was talking about might be a cheap phone and people might not like them and that kind of stuff because they're not like Verizon and stuff, like as they call real cell phones. But she said, to me, a real cell phone is a phone they actually get service. And she said, I had Verizon, who says Verizon's everywhere. And she said, I had more drop calls on Verizon than anything else. And then, you know, she's gone to the other companies too, and like T-Mobile and those kind of things. And she said once she got with Straight Talk, she doesn't remember the last time she dropped a call, you know. So that's very impressive in itself. So check out straighttalk.com and check out Straight Talk. It's one of those things. It's a great phone. They got many phones on there, too, I'm telling you. They actually have, I think, like the Blackberries and that kind of thing. They got sliders. They got the slider phones, the flip phones. I mean, shoot, you can actually buy one of those Blackberries and get the plan, too, all in one deal, $134. And if
Oh,
you
wow.
go, yeah, and you can also go and get a plan and get the same kind of phone, but maybe a refurbished phone for $65. And that's the plan. Seriously, that's the plan and the phone. Okay? And then the next month when you got to buy a card or something, they actually have plans too that you can actually buy. That they're plans that you put in your phone, and they're good for a month, and you have the ones for $45, and it's unlimited texting, phone, minutes, going on the internet, web, the whole thing. Unlimited for $45 a month. But you can also go on Straight Talk too, and they have plans where you can get 3 months in advance. You can actually buy a whole year for what you'd probably be paying on your phone bill in 1 month. I thought that was pretty impressive, because once you buy the phone, the next month all you got to do is buy the plan. So now we've got the phone, so next month it's going to cost me $45, or I might want to take adventure and get a 3 months in advance and be done with it, or get a 6 months, or get a year. Because I was looking at the year. I think the year was like, actually, I can actually look this up. but I think it was 3 or 6 months. It was like $137.
Oh, that's good.
Heck yeah, because you start to look at the situation like, move, man. My phone bill, I was with T-Mobile, and I was paying almost $70 every month. And that's just for the plan. I already have the phone. Take a deep breath. I'm ready for readings, guys, so call in and see what's up. What do you say? Hey, Pase. Guys, can you come back in? Okay? That means... Three readings, baby. They have the phone that I got is it's called the LG 620G reconditioned. It has unlimited it's an unlimited plan, so we have 30 days. It's a 30-day plan, and it's got unlimited texting, unlimited talk, unlimited data, and unlimited calls. So you know you can do whatever you want with that. It's a nice little slider. It's a really small phone too, and very powerful too. I actually walked out in the rain the other day, too, on that other phone I had. It seemed like every time I go out in the rain, I'd have trouble with that phone. It only cost me $55. Now they got the, it's called the Samsung T41G reconditioned unlimited plan. It's the one where you got the phone like I got. Well, it's like, you've seen this phone. It's a whole phone with the little keys and stuff on it, right? And the big old screen. And then it goes. Then you can slide it sideways, and you have a keyboard. Those things
that's awesome.
Yeah, those things are usually going for like over $100 just for the phone itself. On this one here, you can get an unlimited plan and the phone for $65. I was trying to find that one. Let me see if I can find it. I haven't found it yet. I'm looking for it, I swear. Oh, here it is. It's the Samsung R355C reconditioned. That's the phone I'm talking about where you hold it. It's a big old phone. Got the keyboard right on it, big screen. Looks like one of those. It's like a BlackBerry. You can actually download MP3 player music into these things too. And that's $65 for the whole thing. If you've seen the phone, you probably know what I'm talking about. But you know they have this thing going right now where you can. They had a plan where it's a flip phone for $84, but you can get it for $55 too. So it's one of those things. Great deals. Check them out. What I was trying to find here is... I'm going to find these real quick. Poop. Here we go. Okay. All right. Okay. I was trying to find the 6 month plan because I was trying to make sure I don't want to sit there and tell somebody something that just ain't it, you know?
Right.
And I was trying to find the prices on those things. So, sometimes with situations. Just trying to get the right information before we put it out there. Plus, I wanted to go over some things real quick. You guys, like, we were talking earlier, we always talk about Hemisync CDs, too. And Hemisync CDs are great CDs because they're meditational CDs for about any kind of ailments and situations you can think of. Plus, with the situation, the music, it plays great music that most of us have heard about, all kinds of different types of music, spiritual music and that kind of stuff. But also, the technology itself is based on, it's sending out a tone to you. Okay, the tone is, I can't really describe the tone, but it sends out a tone, and when your brain hears it, it actually helps both hemispheres of the brain work together, which actually gives you intense concentration and focus. So whatever you try to put your mind onto, that kind of thing, don't be surprised how easier it gets. And that can drive you crazy. So if you want to check out the CDs, I suggest that I have the piece of paperwork here too, man. What did I do with it? Anyway, go to www.hemi-sync.com. That's S-Y-N-C. Okay. As you go and check out. Okay. 3 months. If you get a 3 month unlimited card, it's $125 for 3 months. If you get 6 months, it's $249. And if you get it for a whole year, that's $499 for the whole year. Most people would probably rack up that kind of thing and what? I've heard you talk about your phone bill, Bree. So you can definitely look at this.
Yeah, I would. It wouldn't take me very long to rack it up.
Yeah, so this is like 1 year of one year unlimited card for like $500. And you won't have to worry about your phone for the next year. But, you know, like I said before, there's 6 months. And there's also 3 months. 3 months is 90 days. That's a long time. I'm serious. I was sitting looking at going, okay, I'm almost paying $70 a month for T-Mobile every month. So for me, that right there is 2 months. It's actually more than 2 months, because in 2 months, at 70, that's $140.
Right.
So, see, I've already saved myself like $27 already. And you see, they also have specials all the time, so you never know. You might actually get cheaper than that. I'm just saying, when you really rack it up and you got $45, $45 for 3 months is what? I have no idea. I have no calculator. Anyway. Just get back to the show. That was our straight talk hour. But I was looking at some things here with the situation of Atlantis and that kind of stuff. I was going over some information here because I was sitting there going, see, right now the possibilities is right here, okay? We have if you get a map, if you go to, I can't remember this site here, hold up. It's called it's Unmuseum, the Lost Continent of Atlantis.com, I think. Go there, and it talks about at the time of Atlantis. Atlantis said they had big masses over here on the flatlands of elephants. Now the problem with that whole scenario is the elephants they're talking about and what they're describing more falls in the category of mastodons and mammoth, woolly mammoth elephants. Okay, because the actual elephants that we know of today didn't really come around until the end of Atlantis. And it's rain. Okay, so we're getting bits and pieces here of people talking about these things because we see pictures all the time of mastodons and mammoth these mammoths, but we see primitive people, you know, almost like caveman people running around and that kind of stuff. So the idea of actually picturing people of the day working with crystals and science and technology and having submarines and boats and ships and that kind of stuff, motorized anything, flying machines and that kind of stuff. At the same time, we have primitive people living in North America. And actually, I think there was actually primitive people living up in the mountains too. So when we started looking at the Mayas and the Atlanteans, well, I'm sorry, not Atlanteans, and the Mayas, the Mexicans, Aztecs, those kind of cultures and that kind of stuff, when we start realizing that they had these what do they call those things that you look at stars? What do they call those? I went blank. Planetariums. There we go. Planetariums. I saw these things. I saw they had the one in that one culture where it's like part of a land, part of the Mayas, and there's even parts. If you sit there and look at it, in Egypt too, there's actually can be classified as planetariums because the way there was this one I saw. It was like going into a temple. Okay, the temple is in the face of a cliff, going back into the side of the cliff. Now, as you go in there, what's so funny about the whole thing, how this thing is all lined up, is when you walk back into the back of this thing, it's dark. And if you're there at 6 o'clock in the morning, there's a thing above the doorway, a little hole above the doorway. At 6 o'clock in the a.m., the sun hits that just right to fill that whole cavern up with light. Now, how do you do that?
Yeah.
So my thing was to see bits and pieces of Atlantis is the ideal of this kind of technology in primitive cultures, that these primitive cultures in some ways were motivated by a higher advanced civilization. Could it also be that the motivation happened before the as people call it, the destruction of Atlantis and that kind of stuff? I think so, because there's a lot of evidence, too, that you can see of high technology after, supposedly, Atlantis disappeared. And that's where I came up with the theory that these outposts, after the... Because they're talking about the continent. Now, think about this. If we're talking about a continent. I wish I had the maps. I almost feel like I should do a class with one of those little pointers, you know? But it's like you're looking at a continent twice as big. Okay, it's like putting the continent of Asia... Okay, and North America together. Okay? And now that, and so people are trying to convince you that in a blink of an eye, even with hurricanes, volcano eruptions, and typhoons, and tsunamis, and all those things working together at one time, you could not really devour a continent that big. So I think we've had it. It's almost like a mini stories put together where we have a culture that disappears. But maybe we're more focused on the culture or the civilization itself disappeared, and that we're hit by these things. But the landmass itself was something that by the time Plato came in existence and got a hold of this story, that the continent itself could have actually naturally went down and through periods of the continental shifts and that kind of stuff disappeared into the ocean. Because there are some great mountains in the Atlantic Ocean underneath the water that if you looked at them as a landmass, that's what you'd call them. You wouldn't call them valleys and deep crevices in the earth. If you took the same landmass and brought it up out of the water, they look just like mountains. But, you know, we've had shifting and that kind of stuff across this world for a very long time. Plus, the idea of the shift, too, was also talking about that as we... There was also an ice age that happened at the same time, too, as well. Because I was actually seeing some people, as in these outposts... These outposts of Atlantis, I saw one up in Iceland. But as I saw them playing in the snow, but I didn't see Iceland... As in having a big snow ice cap over top of it. I seen a landmass there that was being subjected to winter conditions, snow and that kind of stuff. Because I seen the Atlanteans that were used to the water, underneath being under the water and being in warm climates, being fascinated with the snow. But was he fascinated with the snow because they didn't live in those areas and they didn't see snow, or was it the ideal of the climate and everything else was changing too as well? all these things contributed to Atlantis as a landmass disappearing, but to the culture itself, I could see the ideal of those things happening and the end of a culture or a civilization or people spreading out all over the world and that kind of thing. And we sit there going, how come you can't find a lot of evidence of the main palace and that kind of stuff? That's where I look. That's where Crates come in, the island of Crates. If you look at that used to be an island that was destroyed by a huge volcano, and then we have that outer ring that's still there, which is actually part of the old part of Atlantis. So when this thing blew up in that area, yeah, it basically devoured everything. And the process of doing that, you see these people that are on the outside of this this canal and that kind of stuff. I mean, picture the outside of Crates being one of those outer edges and all the places on the outer edge of those things. Those people out there would probably be wiped away. And then anything that was close in Africa and North America and those kind of places would be wiped clean too as well. But you still would have time for people, because I feel like if you have an advanced culture that knows what's going to happen, and there were people that were arrogant to the whole thing, said it ain't going to happen, and then there's other people who said, yes, it is, and we'll see you later. Adios, amigos. You guys will see you on the other side. Because you're going to get swept away like a freaking... going to crack you open like a freaking pinata at a freaking birthday party, huh?
Yeah.
So... let's see. Okay. Hey guys, we got 46 minutes left here in the show, so therefore we're doing past life readings, and we also have a special tonight too, that for the 45th caller. Okay, that'd be great, wouldn't it? For the 10th caller, it's a 45-minute reading you'll get for free. So give us a call in here at 646-721-9031. Let's take a chat in the chat room. Hey, it's Serenity for me. Pretty sure it won't work where Bree is. None do. We have no towers. I am thinking the Hathas girls are in control of a lot of your regular crowd tonight. But I did try, got kicked out as a troll. Sorry. Is everybody freaking out on this I was starting to think about today, you know, the idea of not doing a show on Block Talk Radio and that kind of stuff with all the craziness going on, that kind of stuff. I'm thinking, my theory is like this. When you're in a situation where you have these kind of things going on, wouldn't it be great to have some real teachers stay on Block Talk Radio, and instead of being caught up in the whole thing, that we step back, and in the process of saying, focusing on positive energy, turning things around, and actually focusing on everything being in the light, as in the situation of seeing what we've just gone through, to make us appreciate the light even more, that we want to sit there and sit down and teach people all about spirituality, because it seems like some people are just not getting it. So therefore, in the sense of not getting it, it kind of puts us really in the format of actually teaching not just the people that are coming to Block Talk Radio, but the actual ones out there who think they do know what they're talking about, to see the errors of their ways. Because going this other route really ain't working. You know, it's like, you know, you get caught up in the whole thing, and you don't want to get pulled down and start insulting people and that kind of stuff. What you want to do is you want to find a solution. And I think the big solution here is like Jesus did. Jesus went into the bars and the bad areas and that kind of stuff, helping the people who really needed the help. And here we are, having shows here and that kind of stuff. So therefore, I've had a lot of people come from other radio shows who've been coming to me and listening to my show because they're in the process of wanting to learn more about the topics and the subjects and the stuff we're going through, and really wanting to further their education and spirituality. So therefore, I think we should stay and keep teaching and showing people what it's all about. What do you think, Bree?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, Bree, are you with me? Fun stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, think about it. We're sitting here talking about Atlantis. The biggest thing I like about Atlantis is the idea of trying to trace it back to the situation of saying spirituality and how sometimes it can get out of control. When you have alien races or just somebody who comes into the mix who doesn't understand, and that it's not the idea of controlling, it's the ideal of sharing. And not just sharing information, but also sharing energy, which we call love, and the whole thing that goes along with it, you know, and putting it all together and say, okay, let's teach people what it's all about. And then we know for a fact, even some of the people going out there who are not nice people, they're still crossing our paths for a reason. And I feel like that reason that is, I mean, if we've been put in a position to do just this as our service to the world, to help bring people from focusing on worldly things to more spiritual things, more groundingness and that kind of stuff, it could be simply just that. Some people have gotten caught up in all the things they're going through, which a lot of people do, when they start getting a lot of popularity, and I hope I said that word right, popularity, and things start happening, that kind of stuff. Sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming. A lot of things coming up at once, you know. They kind of lose their way. And then all of a sudden they cross our path. So I just feel like, you know, we're here for a reason. And in the process of actually saying, if we could just get the world together as one loving mass of energy, how do we start that? We start with that with ourselves, don't we?
Yep. Yep.
So that's what I'm saying. Love the world. But the way we improve that, even with some of the people that we don't like their actions, we can actually really get to the root of the matter and find something good in those people, because we know for a fact that everybody has that in them. Sometimes you got to dig deeper with some. But it's all obtainable. I'm just saying, when you sit and focus on yourself and you go deep inside, I mean, what's the conclusion you come up with? Have I not loved enough?
Right.
So I'm just a person that's, I guess I'm all about solutions. Got to find the solution. Serenity for me. What does that mean? Now I'm embarrassed. Yikes, didn't know you were going to make that on the air. Yikes. You know something? We're talking about love. And if somebody comes along and crosses someone's path and wants to stifle that, then I would like to get away from that person, because they got some really bad karma coming. And that's just a scary thing. I wouldn't want to be a part of that at all, period. No. I've been down that freaking road before, where you kind of get a little big-headed and you think you know what you're doing, and all of a sudden all this stuff comes down on you. The only person you can blame is yourself. And then you start going inside and realizing that just exactly what you were doing, what brought that on. So, you know. So, does anybody have any questions about Atlantis? You know? So we're sitting here going a little bit crazy, a little bit stuff going back and forth, but I was actually thinking about going on blogtv.com.
Really?
Yes. And just expand outwards, see what's going on, that kind of thing, you know. So I actually went over there and checked it out and that kind of stuff, and set me up an account, and you can pretty much broadcast anytime you want to, and they got a different format over there, I tell you that. I'm not in no sense of the word advertising for them, so therefore I'm just saying, YouTube, you know, I'm actually on Ustream too. I couldn't find the Ustream connection, because I can sit here and do the show on Blog Talk Radio, and I have Ustream and it usually backs it up, or you can actually see me it's like TV, so you can actually see me as I'm doing the show too as well. I just couldn't find the link quick enough to actually get it hooked up before this, because of having this new computer and everything, and getting everything downloaded in that. So I'm just saying, wouldn't it be crate? Anybody want crate?
Your words tonight are just so funny.
Just kind of blended everything together, huh? Straights and crates and mates. It's good. Kind of, what do you think about that? Let's get straight. But the thing about Atlantis that intrigued me the most was the visuals I saw, was the idea of mass meditations. It's because sometimes I want to stress to people, when you watch movies from Hollywood, it's a very dramatic place in the first place. So you're going to have a lot of drama in the movies themselves when it should be more focused on somewhat, some kind of stronger foundation of facts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just taking some facts that you have and then kind of drumming them up a little bit to make them more entertaining. I mean, I do, because I was sitting there talking about me personally, when I see the palace, now when I see the palace, it's on a mound, but on top of that mound is a huge pyramid. I mean, just imagine a pyramid 10 times bigger, okay? A pyramid 10 times bigger than the Great Pyramid in Egypt. We had a caller for a split second, and they're gone. So, I'm just saying, guys, if y'all want to come on the show and have a good time and talk to us and voice your opinion about Atlantis and that kind of stuff, or the ideal giving us some input here on how we can spread the love here on Blog Talk Radio, hey, I'm all open for it and that kind of stuff, too. If you have a couple questions you want to ask, if you want to ask us, we do readings, we're doing past lives and that kind of stuff, so if you're kind of curious, you want to know if you're Atlantean and that kind of stuff, please join us. We still got 36 minutes here, and I'm Psychic Journeyman, and this is Psychic Ex-Journeyman Talk Radio, and here my co-host, oh gosh, let's just go swimming for a while, what do you say? My co-host, Bree, so join us, and then you can become a part of we. All right, we do have a call on the line, 706. I'm going to click it. Okay, 706 area code. Welcome to the show, and how you doing? Say hello to Bree, and how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Hi, Bree, and hi, y'all. My name is Mark. I've talked to you before, but I'm curious. I didn't get to hear everything you said about Atlantis. Give me a quick rundown. Where is it?
Well, from all the information and from things I've done a lot of past life readings for people too, so there was a continent in the middle of in the Atlantic Ocean between Europe, well actually it's more between Africa and North America, right in that kind of an angle kind of thing. To me, from what I saw, the main palace was actually in the Mediterranean, so Atlantis, as the palace and that kind of stuff, was really not a part of this humongous landmass that we're talking about. Now, there were some things with the situation where there's a connection, and we have a lot of, how would you put this? Atlantis was huge. Okay, so we have the palace, and we've seen the Mediterranean, right? If you've ever been in the Mediterranean, it's a big place, but it's not huge as the ocean. So we take the kind of a picture a culture about almost twice as big as the Roman Empire, the Romans, the Greeks, that whole freaking landmass all together, and you get the idea what Atlantis was all about. So I mean, there were parts of Atlantis that were on this continent as it spread out. It was very flat, and they were very, very ingenious of how they used to learn how to move great masses of dirt and that kind of stuff to. With the, how would you put this? They worked one on one with nature to accomplish all the feats they had to do, like we had with bulldozers and that kind of stuff. They knew how to do that. It's almost like you could call it manipulation. So if you see that main island they're talking about, you're talking more up and down. Looks like it comes up right about where the mouth goes into the Mediterranean. So it was a huge landmass. But my biggest thing about the whole thing, they're talking about a volcano, you know, earthquakes and that kind of stuff, taking this whole humongous continent out. And I'm like, that just doesn't, a continent the size of Asia and North America put together, you know, you could have a really massive earthquake. But even in this country, we've seen earthquakes and that kind of stuff take out some masses in Japan and that stuff, but nothing on the masses of a huge continent where it takes this whole thing and sinks it. You know, it was one of those things of looking at geography, of looking at and geology too as well, of seeing this at this time. You have a great culture and a great civilization, but you also have a lot of things going on with the Earth, where it's reforming itself and moving around, that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of, it wasn't just a volcano and an earthquake and big humongous wave, if anything. There was a lot of things.
Well, speaking of geology, are you familiar with the Perry Reese map from, geez, how many years ago? That I don't even know when it was done, but you ever see that?
Is that the one they found that you see Iceland on it and it has no ice on it?
That sounds familiar, but anyhow, the map just calls America, America. There's no north and south.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a big atlas like National Geographic that has pretty good graphics of the sea floor,
mm-hmm.
if you shove South America back up to, if you look at the seafloor, where it would fit into North America and tweak it around a little bit, that fits his map, or that map,
perfect,
much better.
Yeah.
Because there's like I've seen videos on the search for Atlantis and all that, and
mm-hmm.
that alignment makes more sense than this continental drifting that, you know, it drifted from Africa. I know it looks like it fits well, but if you look at the seafloor, you know, see what I'm talking about.
Well, so they were talking about that freaking great valley canyon or whatever, right, what's this in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and I was like, I mean, I can sit there and look at the theory of a continent sinking because of these plates moving around, that kind of stuff, and then just kind of like, you know, what we call that, because of the way the Earth and that kind of stuff was going, it sank. It was, you know, it wasn't nothing. It wasn't no catastrophe. It was just the ideal of life, everything
well,
going
and
shifting. Go ahead. Sorry.
If it didn't sink, then the sea level rose a whole bunch because they found underground city or underwater cities. Excuse me. There's some in China. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, there was this one guy, what's his name, Professor, I can't remember his name. I had the information here, and I was trying to find it earlier. It's amazing with some of this information. You go in there, and you can find it 1 week, and the next week you can't find it at all.
Yeah, and there's also, they found something off the coast of Cuba, too.
Well, see, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, I want you guys to think about this in a situation of, you have a main palace, which is in the middle of the Mediterranean. Okay, now you have a great civilization, and I know we're great explorers, too. We're all constantly exploring everything on this planet. And so I can't imagine a culture like that. It wouldn't be exploring, too. So they were talking about these – I've seen this on the Discovery Channel, and it's called the Alien Astronaut Theory. And they were talking about you can see these symbols, and there's this one section that looks like a bunch of runways and that kind of stuff. And their theory is these are alien runways and that kind of stuff. I'm sitting there going – how come we have to take it so far? How come we can't look at it differently and take it and put a different word in there that still has an A on it, but it's more here, which is, how come they can't be Atlantean runways? That these people did have the technology to fly and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of cultures out there that have little gold trinkets that look like airplanes that we've actually taken and made mock models of those things, exactly where they were designed on the pendants and that kind of thing. And these things actually do fly. So you're thinking to yourself, why would someone make a pendant like that had that kind of diameters, that when you actually make a model of it, it actually flies?
Yeah.
Unless it actually did exist, you know. So that's what I would say. I was sort of looking at the symbols and looking at some things on the planet. And I used to have a show in the mornings called The Missing Spiritual Link. And what we try to do is we try to take bits and pieces with things that we see and tie them into Atlantis. And every time you would do that, you get more of a clicking than you do aliens. And I'm not saying aliens didn't exist and aliens didn't come here, but I think it was like we've seen like movies and stuff like in Star Trek. In Star Trek, as soon as we discovered warp power, an alien race came here to check us out. I said, so let's look at the situation of Atlanteans becoming powerful and coming up with an energy source that maybe in the sense of the word of sci-fi is more nonfiction than you think. And it's just memories, suppressed memories of stuff that we've got with ourselves. Because we've seen this with past life readings, that people start remembering things that are in their memory. Also, the ideal primitive man. Since primitive man and since now, our brains have gotten bigger, but it's more geared to memory. So it's like we're taking these memories with us from lifetime to lifetime. So the idea of tracing them back, there must be some reason why would there even be that kind of connection if this all wasn't working for us to get us back to that kind of civilization where things were more going. Because people talk about more of on the level of warlike and that kind of stuff, but it's more Hollywood. And I was just sitting there telling people, I said, my visions were like this. I started reading a lot of things about certain people's theories. Oh, we found Atlantis in the Atlantic and the Bermuda Triangle. We found Atlantis in China. We found Atlantis in Japan. We found Atlantis in Australia. And what was the other one? There was like five or six of them. I was sitting there going, what if... instead of trying to figure out who's right, because that's what they're trying to do. They're kind of narrow-minded. They find these theories. They think they found Atlantis, and it hinders their thinking at that moment because they don't look at the possibilities that it might be all connected. That what you're finding is you're finding like the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire had outposts everywhere that wasn't part of the main Rome and that kind of stuff, but they still existed. And we're talking about a huge civilization then too as well. The Egyptians were...
Lemuria also.
Yeah, see, we had a theory. My thing was Lemuria was Atlanteans. Okay, Lemuria came first, and they evolved into Atlanteans. And we have, because they both cultures, because they have a lot of similarities there, where both cultures were heavily in the crystals, healing, meditations, that kind of stuff, working with nature and that kind of stuff. And when we talk about nature, we're talking about energy. And that kind of situation too as well. So I'm just saying, when I sit here and focus on these things, the reason I really pick up a lot of things, going from a personal account to myself of doing past life readings, but it's also from my own past life readings as well. Of being from a place where when I sit here and see these things, it's not the ideal. I mean, when I'm doing past life reading, of course I'm seeing through someone else's eyes, but I've also seen a lot of this stuff through my own, and when I see pictures and that kind of stuff, the first thing that pops in my head is, it's really close, but it's not the per se. But when I saw these people saying, Atlantis is here, 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 and Iceland, that was the other one, Iceland, I started doing past life readings for people who were in those outposts of Atlantis and having those that kind of technology to the point where Atlantis itself, when we see all these theories about them being under the water, not on landmass, but under the water, what some people like to take the theory and put it up there, well, that's what they did because that's how they survived after the initial fall. But there's another lady out there who has a book called it's called The Three Great Falls of Atlantis. And I started looking at the technology on that whole book, and also the Egyptians, who actually had three kingdoms. We have the Old Kingdom, the Middle Kingdom, and the New Kingdom. And then they kind of like disappear, but they were also a mixture of Roman Empire too. But I'm just saying, when you start, some of these cultures are kind of mixing at one point too, how can you not sit back and look at Atlantis that was merging with a lot of cultures out there because of influence? I mean, that's what we were talking about before earlier. We were talking about the magic carpet, you know, the flying carpet. Did people
see them? I think it was India. They had, Atlantis had them. They're called Vermanas, or flying machines. You heard of those?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I was like looking at the thing, and I said, if you look at India at the time, at what their culture was, to see somebody doing that, and they were in, you know, the Persian rugs and that kind of stuff, and what kind of culture they were, of course they would put the two together. I see someone flying on something, so they just put two and two together. They couldn't put the dynamics together as a machine, or energy source, or crystals and that kind of stuff. They put it together because of what they were influenced. Their culture was a lot of cloth. You have Persian rugs, and you know, their culture was just really, if you notice how they did their palaces and stuff, the curtains and the materials and that kind of stuff, taking that kind of material, and they didn't have the concept of machinery. It was all cloth. So you put the two together, you got a flying carpet.
Well, speaking of architecture, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
You notice all the old buildings, mainly in Europe and stuff like that, they all got these big, giant doors.
Yeah.
Now, why would somebody 6 feet tall or maybe 5.5 feet tall back then build such big, giant doors?
I'm thinking
that the giants from way back
helped
them build it, and they made the doors so they could fit through.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, because when you get to the one cultures, there were some cultures, like when they built the walls around the cities in the East and the Middle East, those were small doors. But you also look at the situation of the two coming together. You have David and Goliath. So you have a kind of thing going on there. But, you know, sometimes we can look at David and the Goliath as a clash between two cultures, not just two people. And a lot of things that were done back in the day were done like in a metaphor like that too, where there was cultures and kind of thing like that. Because I also saw some information where they were talking about great men, and we have Atlanteans that were actually like your avatars. Okay, you have avatars, and you got, because if you, and then people think it's kind of crazy when you think about it, but if you go to Mexico, I think it is, there's that one guy who has a great tomb down there, and there's a huge piece of stone on top of this guy, and they said that this is the one you see in the Bermuda Triangle books, where they show the carvings on the wall, where it looks like a guy, he's in a capsule, and he's got a fire shooting out the end of that thing. Well, that's actually their king, and they said that the king averaged at about 7 feet tall. And there's a lot. If you sit there and look at some of these cultures, you'll see that they had some great rulers that were really big guys. And then the same thing in Egypt. In Egypt, as in the earlier, in the ancient, in the old kingdom, you have a lot of representations of that too, of big, tall men as pharaohs and that kind of stuff. But as things go along, and I think it's what we call a mixture of Atlanteans that were actually helping these people do these kind of things and build these places to the point where. That they wanted to coexist too, so they wanted to be able to go, you know, have people do that. It's like you ever go into a building and everything's like on the left side, it's because a left-handed person did it. So if you have a person with high doorways and big doorways, you know, back in those days they built things for one reason. It had to serve a purpose, or they wouldn't have done it that way. So that you know, falls in the perfect category of having those kind of people around. Can you say Atlanteans? I think it was people that were in the same culture on the same continent as Atlantis that coexisted with Atlanteans too. Because there was a lot of things that I saw where there was a lot of cultures and a lot of alien cultures all blending together in Atlantis, and with the idea of Atlantis and the heyday of what it was all about. Then you started getting other alien races that are intersecting into it. They can throw the balance off. And then you have a lot of things where you got to rebalance and get the civilization itself to take in the whole masses before you can actually balance it out. And if you have a couple of warlike, you could say, alien races or even human races. If you have a couple that are warlike, those are the hardest ones to deal with because they always want to dominate everything. And usually when it comes to peaceful, loving people, those are the people they like to take over the quickest because they feel like they're the easiest to dominate.
Well, speaking of different races, you take a look at all the races around the world, different colors, shapes, sizes, this and that. I think we talked about, maybe it might have been you, I don't know. Anyhow, it didn't all come from Adam and Eve.
Well, we did talk about that. I mean, we've talked about that in the Bible. It talks about Adam and Eve, and they have two kids. And next, you know, Cain kills Abel, and he's out in the wilderness, and God marked him so nobody would kill him. And I've asked preachers and priests of this, too. Like, my question is, I got that part. I understand what he did that for, because, you know, he's protecting Cain, because you know, basically, Adam and Eve have children, but they're still a part of the whole, so God's still seeing them as being very important, so he protected. But then we have all these people. Okay, they're going through towns and villages, and as he goes through these towns and villages, he's marked so nobody will kill him. Where do those people come from? So can
What race do you think that Atlanteans were? I've heard somewhere that basically they were Egyptians originally or something like that?
Actually, it's looking at the situation like this. So looking at Atlanteans, which is kind of hard for people to conceive. What? Yes? It's like looking at the situation of Atlanteans as being non-racial. And then in the process of all these other things coming into play, of finding that there was other races on this planet. Now, where they all come from? I mean, I was sitting there putting the two together when you have Atlantis and the Garden of Eden, where they were one and the same. And when you have those two and you put them together, you could look at Adam and Eve as actually, when they left the garden, it could actually be the idea of leaving Atlantis in favor of creating a life of their own because of things have fallen apart. So in the process of alien races becoming pretty much a part of coming to Atlantis and that kind of stuff, then you have these other races that spring off. But Atlanteans themselves were almost like... because actually, if you sit and read the Bible, Adam and Eve was not of any kind of race. They were just a spiritual... They were just a spiritual race. I guess you'd call it that way. It's a column. I don't know what you call them. I mean, I know it's like when I read the Bible, I'm sort of going, I can see the idea of creation and that kind of stuff and how it was all put together and seeing this whole thing go on. But I also read the part of the Bible, too, where it says he's talking to the animals, he's talking to Adam and Eve to go out in the garden and be prosperous and abundant and be fruitful and multiply. So in the process of this whole thing, and even the Bible mentions that to Eve, since she sinned, therefore from that point on, childbirth would be painful. Now, when they say that, when you listen to it, it's basically implying that childbirth has been going on, but now it's going to be painful. Okay? And so we have things changing, you know, quite a bit. So that's what I was saying before. You know, a lot of changes, a lot of different things spinning off in different directions. But when I sat there and saw the visions myself, I saw that the Atlanteans were part of this great civilization that all you see is nothing but what they're trying to accomplish. I don't know how to put it. I mean, I know for a fact that when I do readings for people, I really can't tell the difference when I'm doing a reading on the phone, you know, where they're from and what kind of culture, what kind of ethnic background or anything like that.
Well,
you know,
speaking of readings, you've been talking for like 10 minutes with me. I have anything going back to Atlantis? Did you pick up on?
Yes, I did. I felt like that you were part of the third piece there, because they call it the three falls of Atlantis, and you were in the third before the great everything catastrophe, everything went down the hill. You're a part of that whole situation. It's like if you've ever watched any movies where you see a dude on a boat leaving Atlantis. And it kind of struck any kind of chords with you. That's because that's exactly what you did. You were not...
On a boat, huh?
Yeah, because a lot of people sitting there go, well, they had a lot of technology and that kind of stuff. Why didn't they just use that technology? You know something? In the idea, there were certain people who just left, okay? They found any kind of means to do so. And if you didn't own a boat, they still had those little boats that they go out and... they do the little shipping, how do you put it, fishing boats, little fishing boats. For some reason, it seemed like it was a lot easier to take the little fishing boats out as far as you could. They were less likely to capsize and that kind of stuff, and they were a whole lot easier to maneuver. Take about three or four guys out, and you can come back with some really massive fish. And I'm just saying, when I see that whole thing, I just see you as you're leaving Atlantis and heading out, way before anybody else even thought about doing, because it seemed like you believed in your abilities, which almost, I'd say, more than half of the Atlanteans did anyway. But there was a couple of people who did have a tendency to be a little wondering exactly what they could do with their abilities, as in a criminal way. If you want to use the word criminal, I don't know how to even use it, because some of the terms that we use now, you really can't use there as stealing from somebody, because there was really nothing to steal. It was almost like the masses, everybody owned, you know, like the idea of the term, my brother's keeper. The term really originates from there, where it's the ideal, the theory is, if I take care of my brother takes care of somebody else, so it goes on and on and on and on and on until it gets back to you. So it's a continuous, spontaneous thing that happens all the time with giving. That always comes back, and they had this. They actually had the visuals where you could picture it hand from hand to hand to hand, and that's what it was. So it was just Atlanteans thinking. You know, and it really, It's like a subculture like we have now. They call it the underground. You know, underground music, underground this, and that's not a term that's recent. It's a very ancient term of people have the tendency to do certain things, but more on a different level that are down, not good. Just put it this way, down, not good. But with your situation, I just feel like you got a hold of a boat and you were a fisherman. When I see you, I see the idea of going fishing, but on different terms than most people would think about fishing, of using your mental powers or your telepathic powers to summon fish. Because when you sit here and look at Atlantis, when I see Atlantis, I don't see fishing nets. Yeah, give me an example, okay? There was a comic book hero called what's his name? Gosh. Oh, I just had the freaking nerve term too. He was in the DC comics. He was like Batman and Superman's friend, Aquaman. Aquaman had a way of sitting there telepathically talking to fish and that kind of stuff. When we talk about Atlanteans working hand in hand with nature and that kind of stuff, it's the ideal. This might sound crazy to most people, but actually telling a fish it's time for you to sacrifice yourself for the good of society and that kind of thing. I mean, could you actually picture that, something like that happening?
Well, actually, they're kind of doing that right now in Japan, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So it's the ideal working with nature and that kind of stuff, so that everybody has a thing about that. And actually, I was talking to Doreen Virtue, not talking to her, but I was reading one of her books, and she was talking about the same thing of actually talking to animals, because people were saying, going, you know, being cruel to animals and that kind of stuff, and saying, you know, animals know their part. They know what they're here for and the ideal of that situation. So some of us have a tendency to be too arrogant and thinking that we're taking up for fish and animals and that kind of stuff, when actually it's just more of a triumph for ourselves. So, yeah, exactly. So that's what I see with you. I just feel like you think a lot, you focus a lot. I just feel like the abilities that you have, you still have. And it's just the ideal of having a trust in those situations and those abilities that you have. Whoa.
Now, Edgar Cayce, you're familiar with him, right?
Yes, most definitely, yeah.
Okay. Now, he says that Atlantis and Lemuria or either or both are going to rise back up, if I remember right. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, well, the thing goes like this. Edgar Cayce said that the ideal of those two cultures would come to the surface and everybody would know for a fact that they did exist, and that there would be parts of that would come to the surface. Now, he was predicting that it would be in the Caribbean, that there would be proof of certain things happening. And there have been things that have been found that were, at the time he said that would happen, that were actually found, that was more of a uprising, more of a culture to actually have more belief in it and that kind of thing. So there was an uprising in the situation, but not in the ideal of evidence or like a big piece of Atlantis going to the surface. It was more of a things coming to the surface of other people that did believe in Atlantis and Lemuria and those places like that coming more to the surface and more mainstream, where people were really putting a lot of work into that. And at that time, you did see a lot more books come out about the Bermuda Triangle, Atlantis, and that kind of stuff, too. Actually, the first movie came about 1961. It's called The Lost Continent of Atlantis, and there's a lot of things in there, too, that, like I said before, there's a lot of things with movies and books and that kind of stuff that I can really resonate. It's like when I read the Bible. I can tell when I read the Bible that there's certain parts that are actually more influenced by man, and then you can see the other parts that are really more spiritual. And I can actually take the whole context. If you really read it through a spiritual awareness, then it makes more sense. The same thing with these situations. Like with the movie, there's things on the tip of the triangle, but it's actually the three. But three is more on the line of more like the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, and it's more of a spiritual concept thing, that kind of thing. Yes, you can really do a lot of things with pyramids and energy and that kind of stuff too, but it's the energy you're talking about. But
speaking of pyramids, is there something special about the shape of the pyramid that enhances power or brings it in or shoots it out?
Well, actually, it's the idea of alignment. If you sit there, and I've seen this too, and I said this was really cool theory that someone came up with, because when you sit there and look at it, it really resonates with me, is if you look at the star cluster or the galaxy Orion, if you look at the star galaxy of Orion, if you look at that, how it lines up, then you have the Great Pyramid, there's three pyramids line up to the whole thing. But see, if you look at a lot of things when it comes to celestial things, in Mexico, all those pyramids, all and the valley, what is it called? The path of death or something like that, where they have all those pyramids, and each one of those pyramids basically represent a planet. And then we have the moon and the sun, and then we have all the planets, the nine planets are all lined up and everything. But there's actually a tenth pyramid, too, so it talks about a tenth planet, which was actually discovered, and they've gone back and forth on that whole thing. Now they're trying to classify as Pluto as more of a moon and then it is a planet itself. But these celestial things have all turned around. That's what I was talking about earlier too, when I started looking at these cultures who have these planetariums. And every time I saw these planetariums, it's almost like Atlanteans being in a situation where they're thinking about the things they used to do when their culture was still alive with their planetariums, and the just all the things they used to focus on, which is these celestial galaxies and that kind of stuff, and then they built these things when they were with these other cultures. Because the reason I felt like some of these dudes were actually bigger than life because of the pharaohs. The pharaohs had this reputation of gods. And I said, I've sat there and studied those cultures and those civilizations. And what you have is usually you have at the beginning, you do have a person with great abilities that comes off as a god. So therefore, the pharaoh and what it represented had a basis of truth of somebody who had those abilities as a godlike. Okay? Oh, 413. Come on back. So,
Hey, well, you got another call. Let me hang up and take another call.
Well, I did, but they're not there.
Yeah, we got a question in chat.
We have a question in chat. No, I was just saying with you, Mark, it was with the situation. Look at these celestial bodies, especially the Orions, and you'll see a lot of the Orions. There's actually a place on Mars that's got also the same kind of alignment of pyramids, too, that we have in Egypt. And a couple other places here on the planet. And also, if you take all the places that have pyramids and you line them up, you also get a triangle too. So we have I'm sorry, Bree, we have a question in chat.
Yeah, she was she can't call in, and she asked me to ask you about it. My destiny, she says, do you see me staying in Downey, California this summer and helping an older woman with day-to-day with shopping, cleaning, and stuff like that in exchange for a small apartment for the summer to keep the kids safe? The kids' mom is trying to kidnap them.
Okay. Let's see. I'm sorry. That'll be $3,000 for that answer. I'm only kidding. No, I know my destiny. I know who she is. I know the situation. I know what's going on. And, you know, the situation to me, I would say a very strong yes, you need to go to a safe house and get away for the summer. You know, I know you usually take about a 2-week vacation, but now it's time to take a three-month vacation and get away from the situation. Take your kids. So, like, you know, look at the situation. Say, hey, we're doing a little good thing going on, like that kind of thing. But on the same level, what you need to do there is just take some stuff and move. Find you a nice place. Get away for the summer. I think it's one of those things. It's just not the idea of get away. It's safe, but I also feel like it's one of the situations of actually connecting with your kids even more, too. And I just feel like when you walk away from this whole situation, you're going to have a really strong bond and connection with each other and that kind of stuff. And I just feel like you and your husband are going to get even closer, too, and find out more things about yourselves. So it's definitely a great thing to do, not just for the ideal of safety of the children, But, you know, the whole thing. And I, like I always say before, there's nothing, there's no reason to keep secrets from each other. So it's like keep everybody informed, and the kids, and that's what's going on, that kind of stuff, because they're very informative and they're very deep into information that they pick up too. And the idea of having your daughter on the show again, we need to talk about that too as well. So, but definitely find a nice place for the summer and just get away, have a good time, that kind of stuff. I mean, and excuse me. Plus the situation with your job and that kind of stuff. The more I think about that situation, I'm just getting really tired of the people you're working for, because they're not really taking any kind of consideration of the people, as in the residents that live there and the people who work there. Because it seems like there's one person who's still there, and for some reason that whole format should have changed by now, but it hasn't. And for some reason I feel like people are really stonewalling this one, and I don't know why. You almost get the impression that this one guy who's a maintenance dude, he seems like he might have something over somebody's head, so he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So it's just one of those things of finding the whole thing, and I still see you guys moving in September. So if you have any more questions about the whole thing, give me a call. All right, Holly. So is there any more questions?
Will it be down in California? I quit Friday.
What's that, sweetie?
Says, will it be down in California? I quit Friday.
Downey, California?
Yeah.
And you put Friday?
Yeah, she quits Friday.
Oh, she quits Friday.
Yeah. Or okay, now she's just saying, I'll call you.
Okay. Hey, Holly, sit down. Take down the number. I'm going to put it down in the chat room if I can find it. Okay, call me at this number. Okay, so I'm not going to tell anybody on the air. I'm going to try to keep this one pretty much neutral. Let's see. Yeah, because right now, Bree, the only person who really has a phone number, my phone number, is you. So, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. Thank you all. It's been great. It's been fantastic. And, if you have any more questions and that kind of stuff, please contact me on my private line or through my website, which is the number 740-601-9835, or contact me on my website, which is www.psychic-journeyman.yolasite.com. And like I have been saying this lately, but may God and the angels bless you every minute of every day, and give love where love is given, and thank you, and be with us tomorrow for Wednesday. That's going to be it's like past life readings roundtable Wednesday. So join us for that, and we're going to have some nice little topics. And plus, we're all doing private readings, and we're going to try to go ahead and give away this free reading, which for the 10th caller calls in, you get a 45-minute reading. So check us out on that whole thing, and we'll see you guys all tomorrow. Thank you, and you guys have a great night. Bye-bye now. Ciao. And Mark, thank you for being here. And
sure.
We're here every Tuesday talking about Atlantis.
Okay.
It's called the Missing Spiritual Link Tuesday, and we just kind of like put it all together. And like I said before, my biggest thing I was focusing on was those runways in Peru, because they keep pushing the idea of they're landing in runways. And my theory is, if you're a civilization that's flying from another planet to here, do you really need a runway to run on? No.
I agree 100%. That don't make sense one bit. There's something else. They're not runways.
Yeah. Right. And I said,
one theory I've heard was that they're landmarks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look for the guy or the monkey, and you know that's where they go.
Well, see, what I was doing was looking at reason I connect them to Atlantis is because the animals and the symbolism that these things represent, you can trace them back to Atlantis. So we can sit there and look at them as – we could look at them as – I'm not saying – because, see, one thing I know about planets and aliens, and it seems like the whole thing of that kind of technology, they should have a lot of things more advanced than we are. So, therefore, the idea of finding these landmarks and that kind of stuff should be pretty much your – what do you call that? I had the word right in my nose, too. your gravitational travel, whatever. I can't even think of it now.
Well, you know, another thing, you know, it could be, you know, I'm sure, you know, they're so far advanced, they don't even need that, but I don't know. I mean, just like a new pilot here in training, you know, landmarks are nice, you know, to
have. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is if you have a landing, see, in our heyday, we have runways across this country that we don't use anymore. They're just sitting there. Okay, we've advanced far beyond those, so we don't need those anymore.
Yeah,
so
we've outgrown them, basically.
Yeah, we've outgrown them. So if you look at Atlantis and that kind of thing, because they were talking about aliens, and it's the way they got the aliens represented on this planet, they look like they're primitive. And the primitive technology that I see when I see these symbolisms and that kind of stuff, the idea of getting to this planet, I just don't see it happening with that kind of technology. Because right now, and with NASA and all the stuff that's been going on, that kind of stuff with our jet propulsion and that kind of stuff, I mean, getting to Mars, it's like a 3-year journey. So when I saw these situations and the aliens in particular, I see them in very high advanced technology. Now, I was there telling a friend of mine, I said, you have a UFO that comes shooting down through and then hits the water. And I said, I was center focusing on that one day, and the way that came to me was a force field is not just the ideal protection from the elements. It also protects you in a lot of things as being like a shock absorber. And I said, here you have this force field around your starship. As you hit the water, the trauma that you create when you hit the water is absorbed by force field. So therefore, the people that are in the machine or the thing that's being protected does not feel it.
But exactly. The force field acts like a buffer and probably pushes the water out of the way so it actually doesn't crush the ship.
Exactly. So when they go, so they can hit great depths and the whole thing. And I was telling a friend of mine, I was like, "And why are they going in the water? They're not. They don't need to go in the water to basically hide themselves because they don't have the problem of exposing themselves in the air all the time. So why would they? What's the water thing? Now I saw this on the Discovery Channel on one of those shows, Monster Quest, and they were in that kind of format. They had gotten some pictures from a spy satellite that took a picture that was between the Gulf of Mexico and South America, that water, all that water in there. They actually got a picture of some kind of tubes that were underneath the water in that area, right there where those islands and stuff are. There's tubes. They look like tunnels of some kind of civilization there.
Well, now that you mention that, I ran across something the other day. I forget where or what, who. But anyhow, they were talking about underground or underwater cities like Atlantis. I believe they were talking about Atlantis that actually it's a thriving city underwater.
Right. Yeah, so I brought the theory up about Atlantis. My first show I did here at night, I call it Atlantis. Was it or is it? And the theory we had on there was I saw these tunnels, and then the next week, they had time frame photographs. So you see these things one week, and the next week you don't. They're moved. They're gone. And then I was sitting there telling a friend of mine, I said, I done a couple past life readings for some people. I did one for one lady who actually lived in the middle of Canada. And I saw her living in Atlantis, and she said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah, but it's kind of crazy. When I see Atlantis, I see a blue force field, a blue aqua force field, and it's under the water, but I see you close to Iceland." Okay, so I saw a couple of people. I'd done readings for that one. Then I did a couple other readings for people who were from Atlantis. I also saw the same thing. I saw a blue force field underneath the water, but this time they were near Cuba. Okay. And then I saw it, and then there was a couple other people I've done readings for, and for some reason I've done some other really focus points on other things where the guy, I was sitting there focusing on the guy who said he discovered Atlantis, and he felt like it was right there in the water near China. And I was sitting there going, okay, now I see another one. I see another forest field. I see aqua blue forest field. I see people living and thriving there, but I also see them coming up from time to time because they get tired of eating seaweed. So they venture out to the islands, the other cultures, they pick up food supplies and that kind of stuff, and then they go back. And a friend of mine was like, well, if you have this big force field, how are they getting you know, how can they come out of the force field so easily? I said, watch Star Trek. In Star Trek, you'll see the ships, they have force fields that you can go through. You can go back and forth through. That keeps the atmosphere and stuff in, but enables a human body to go out through. So it's a different force. It's a different
physics.
Yeah, different physics on the whole thing. But I've actually seen these in a couple episodes of Star Trek. So I was like, you know, when I watch Star Trek, a lot of things I see there and a lot of things that are going on, it really makes you think that are these not suppressed memories of other things that we've gone through? And we've seen, what was it? Somebody said there's aliens that have lived on Mars because there's pyramids and there's a face on Mars and that kind of stuff. And I said, you could call it a hoax or something like that. I said, just take it back to Earth and say, okay, how far advanced was Atlantis? Because I say Atlantis is being very primitive in some sense of the word. And then all of a sudden they discover this freaking energy source using crystals. And all of a sudden their technology advances so freaking quick because of the capability of not just, you know, technology and information itself, but able to store it, you know. And see, a lot of cultures, the biggest problem with a lot of their technology and really getting advancing very far in their technology was their technology to store it and keep track of it and that kind of stuff. So, you know, primitive writing and chiseling. I mean, sitting there chiseling something all the time would be a little hassle. I have a theory, but I don't want to really chisel it out right now. And, you know, the Egyptians did have people who also wrote and used ink and put it on some kind of paper they came up with. But this was like, you know, it's not like today where we just go to the store and buy some paper. You know, they got to make everything. And it was a little bit different. But Atlanteans found ways to, when they came up with crystals, we've come up with the science too. You can take a crystal. And like a crystal, that you see these crystals about the size of, if you had a crystal the size of a laptop, you could probably store all the information on the computers in the Pentagon on that one crystal. And there's actually a lady who actually does, she does this thing where she can show you that there are certain crystals and that kind of stuff that was actually used by Atlanteans and Lemurians, that they actually stored information on those crystals, and she can actually pull that information out of those crystals. So the technology does exist. There's things going on. It's just the ideal that sometimes because if you watch the news and the media and that kind of stuff, they keep talking about if we could just do something with the subconscious mind. I'm sort of going, what do you mean, if we could? We've been doing that for years. The ideal of they're talking about manifestation, and they're talking about the manifestations and using the mind to do that kind of thing. And if you listen to doctors and scientists, the one thing they always keep saying over and over again, oh, that's like 10 years in the future. Well, I think it's 10 years in the future when people start believing it. But
that's why they keep telling you, it's not here yet, it's not here yet. They're just programming them.
And that's why I told everybody, I said, you know, we're talking about the crystals and that kind of stuff, and scientists were first saying that the idea of having crystals those size, the size of crystals that we're seeing and stuff like that, did not exist. And then last year they found two caverns. One's near the one cavern is near the Bahamas, and the other one is in Mexico. And these crystals are the size of trees. Now, you've seen the crystals we were talking about before. Those crystals, the like four or five sided crystals, the small ones they keep people talking about. They were talking. Scientists said, well, if you could find one big ones, you could actually use those as power sources. But the idea of actually having crystals that size is impossible because of what it would cost. What it would actually do in the process to make those crystals is impossible. And
well,
they found these.
Exist naturally. I've seen somewhere under underground cave or something like that. These things are giant.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. They found these two caverns. One's by near the Caribbean, right in there. They found a cavern full of these things about the size of trees.
I missed that. Sorry.
Oh no, that's fine. And then there's another one in Mexico too. I think there's also another one in Utah where they found these crystals the size of trees. I saw this one. It was a crystal, like I told you about this once. You know, the clear crystal, the quartz crystals. They see these one. These are white crystals, and white crystals are actually better for the source of any kind of lasers or something like that. But these things here, it shows a guy standing next to it, and it's about the size of a freaking a full-size oak tree.
Yeah.
But they do exist, and so the idea what we see in these movies and stuff of actually taking crystals and use them as lasers to zap people and that kind of stuff, now it's looking more possible than ever before that they did, you know. And plus the areas that they found them in, too, makes perfect sense with some of the things that we've got, especially in the Caribbean and some of the things like that. Plus, if we have a continent as big as they say there was and the kind of thing like that, we don't really know what this continent had on it either. But I do know for a fact, if you're looking for those kind of crystals, because they were talking about Atlantis built their civilization around a volcano. If you were highly advanced, why would you do that? I said, where do you find crystals? Usually in the tubes of volcanoes. So now it makes more sense because you have a lot of pressure going on there back and forth and kind of stuff, which makes these crystals. And these caverns they're finding and stuff like that are also being basically lined up and found that they're also associated with, there's volcanoes in the area.
Huh.
And the pressure and that kind of stuff you need to do because they're finding places like out in Colorado. People don't know this, but Pike's Peak is actually an extinct volcano. And they have a lot of caverns. They have the seven something caverns. And then they have the thing called the cavern of the winds. If you've ever been out there yourself, I've been out there many times, a lot of places and that kind of stuff. The erosions with the creeks and the streams and stuff they got going on fits right in with that too as well, because you have a lot of water formations after those volcanoes go extinct that they have a tendency to start collecting on top of them because as high as they are, you know, usually mountains have a tendency to have their own weather, and usually it's cold and that kind of stuff because of the atmosphere they got going on. But in the process of doing that, these tubes and stuff and that used to be a part of the volcano become waterways, and that's what they've done. You really can't get the full format of it on one side because you can't see it because it's all vegetation and that kind of stuff. But on the other side, you can definitely tell that it was definitely a volcano.
Yeah, well, if Pike's Peak is a dormant volcano, it may be waking up sometime soon.
I hope not, because I liked it out there, man. It's a beautiful place.
according to the way all this shaking's going on and earthquakes and volcanoes popping up, but there's a lot of volcanoes going on right now.
That's true, but also out there, that's also right there at Manitou Springs, where I used to live at, it's a great vortex of energy and that kind of stuff. And from the technology that I saw Atlantis had, they took mass positive energy, put them together, and came up with an energy source that was conscious of itself. And the process of doing that, we're able to keep a volcano dormant for a very long time until an imbalance came in their society from other races. Well, I call them alien races coming in there and bringing in negative energy of wanting to dominate, throwing the balance off. They could, you know, the masses could no longer control the volcano itself. So therefore, that was one of the things that worked against them, and other things too as well. But there was also a lot of arrogance with these alien races coming in because of where they came from. They wasn't used to this kind of a planet with this kind of vegetation and that kind of stuff. And realistically, seeing planets and stories about aliens coming here because they basically destroyed their own planet. I was sitting there talking to a friend of mine. I said, what if we were originally from Mars? And that we destroyed our environment and the atmosphere and that kind of stuff. So we found this other planet to come to. So therefore, the idea of dinosaurs and that kind of stuff, maybe the reason they're not in the original texts of our books and that kind of thing, is because we're from somewhere else where they would all take and they'd all have part of it.
Yeah, I've heard of that theory before. Mars got wiped out and kind of migrated here.
Yes.
Like you say before, you know, they got the pyramid structures there, just like we got here.
Mm-hmm. They do, because one guy was sitting there trying to say, well, they found out that was a hoax. Yeah, from who? Are you going to believe everybody you see? I said, I'm going to go by what I feel. And I saw this thing on the Mars, too, and I was looking at the thing, I saw the picture, and I said, you notice Mars didn't hide, I mean, not Mars, but NASA didn't hide it, but they also didn't want to make it public either. So they kind of like stayed neutral so they could actually say, well, we never hid anything. They just never told you about it. And that's a thing that goes back and forth all the time. So, you know,
Yeah, well, eventually they went and took new pictures of it, and it came out all distorted. So,
of course they did, but now you know. But now you know about
it. Hide it.
Yeah, now you know about it, so therefore, you know, the idea of having any kind of distorted pictures or anything with the technology that we got right now just really rings of, you know, sabotage.
Yeah, that's well, that's what they do. So.
Yes, people are always sitting there going, how will the masses ever handle this? Well, they've never actually gone that far, so they really don't have anything to base this on, base that on either. We've never actually – I mean, back in the 30s, I'll give them the idea when Orson Welles did his little Halloween thing where he came off and it was realistic and people thought that aliens were coming here and attacking us and that kind of stuff. The one theory that I used to get a kick out of was the guy said what they would do is they'd do old series and they'd bring them back, and what they would say was – it actually happened, and they tried to make it, they wrote everything out to where it did happen back in the 50s. The War of the Worlds did happen, but since it was such a shock to the system and the people that were there, and what technology is with the country, I'm saying alien races were coming here and racing our minds, it was actually the government doing it because of not wanting us to know about the aliens themselves. And the technology that was there. So therefore, we was attacked. There were certain things going on, that kind of thing. And so, do they come from Mars? The whole thing, the story was, Mars was also a diversion of really keeping people away from the ideal. Because I was sitting there going, you know, when I saw that cluster, which they call Orion, and Orion has been in a lot of movies too. They had the one on Men in Black. The Galaxy of Orion.
Yeah.
Was in that movie. And I said, well, that's kind of funny how that always has a tendency to come up in certain things like that, even as a theory. And maybe it's more than just a theory. Maybe somebody knows the fact about the whole thing and they're trying to kind of like put it into movies and stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that myself. They're just kind of easing this stuff in on you.
Yes. Because I was sitting there telling them, I said, it's amazing about scientists and government. And they keep saying, well, this technology will be around about 10 years. And you're like, how do you come up with that stuff? And my theory was, they've already got it. They've already invented it. And when I saw the movie The Men in Black, they're basically saying they have all this technology from alien races and stuff. And each year they kind of gradually let it, you know, release it out into the masses and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, saying, well, where do you think all the computer chips come from?
Mm-hmm.
That technology.
Oh, yeah. And we got the Terminator and all those kind of stuff. That's kind of creepy in itself.
And if you look at the progression of, say, the past 100 years, I mean, we have just grown leaps and bounds, basically, in, you know, computer and electrical technology. I mean, you know, we still have cars, but, you know, that's a business in itself, and...
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like the computer chip, something so small, I just don't believe a human came up with that by himself.
Right. It's like everything else. Like the Japanese, they have a tendency to take ideals that already exist and really improve on them. So
yeah.
The idea of looking at them, the situation of being some kind of... alien DNA and that kind of stuff. Not saying, because, you know, when you look at people, it's kind of hard to sit down and talk to people anymore and say, okay, the idea of tracing origins back and that kind of stuff. Some people get offended because they think you're trying to belittle them, when it's just the idea of tracing, look at you in the mirror.
Well, like, I was asking before about all the different races. I mean, if you look at different cultures, they kind of got their own look. But if you start imagining this culture crossed with that culture, I mean, you take like the Asians and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
They look similar. You
yeah.
Throw another mix in there of something, and, you know, they got the eyes, the hair color, you know, the skin color.
Same thing
color.
With Indians, too. They said the Indians are actually a descendant from the Asians. And they said after years of being separated from their own culture, they would evolve and adapt to where they're at. And I was like, because, you know, most Indians realistically are classified as short and that kind of thing. But, and, you know, with evolve, with the way they have evolved, if they did adapt to their, I mean, because North America is not exactly like Asia. So there's difference in Asia, but we're not talking about Japanese, we're talking about Chinese. So there's definitely a little difference there too as well. So I'm just saying, well, we looked at everything and say, okay, maybe the origins are there, but we can all say that we are human, but the idea of saying that aliens and humans couldn't do that, you know, there's races on this planet that have done the same thing. So it's a concept. I don't know why people are kind of scared to take it another direction and say, okay, you know, it's been happening for not just hundreds of years and maybe a lot longer than that.
Well, that's what they were taught.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand what you're saying on that one, too, because
they
God,
think
really
that's
done.
True.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand it's been lied to their whole life.
Same thing with the Indians, you know. I was sitting there talking to a friend of mine. She said that they had spirits and stuff like that. And the process of the spirits and things, they were Indian spirits with the attitudes, saying, get off my land and that kind of stuff. I'm like, you got some disgruntled Indian spirits there, but I said the real true spiritual Indians, they just move on. They understand the spiritual concept, and I said you got some Indians here that are very material conscious because they want their land back. And because I was talking to my friend Wanda, and she's freaking out and talking about this, that, and the other, and I'm just like, you know, sometimes you just got to do this, you got to stand up and do this. I'm like, but why? What's the point? She goes, just because you got to. And I was like, I can't do that no more. You know, it's like, look at the situation and the idea of just let everybody be whatever they want to be and then look at the real important issues, you know. When it comes to people per se themselves, they all got to go through their own awakening. You can't do it for them. You can help them as much as possible, but sometimes in situations of walking away, that's one thing that has a tendency to wake people up, you know.
Yeah, well, the way I look at it, you just got to be a farmer. You know, you just throw out ideas to them, plant a seed, and maybe one day it'll kick in and maybe not. You never know.
Well, we know in our own lives that when we have these eureka moments, it's after somebody's told us, not at the same time they're telling us. And those are the things we've experienced ourselves. That's what we learn from that we want to pass on to everybody else. You'll get your eureka moment. I don't know when, I don't know where, but you will. So this is just information for you to put in your little computer, and which has actually been proven that the brain is actually more efficient and twice as fast as your modern computer.
You know, I had a teacher in college that told us that years and years and years ago.
Well, you know, it's just the idea of learning how to tap into it, and a lot of us have. Sometimes when it comes to psychic ability, think about this. Doing psychic readings and that kind of stuff, sometimes you see the past, the present, and the future at the same time, and you're able to comprehend the whole thing in order to sit down with somebody and find the answers for what they're looking for. And the possibility of doing those things, the more you meditate, the more you focus, the more you open it up, the more those things happen. When people say you're talking too fast, no, you're just listening too slow, you know?
Yeah, well, you do talk fast.
I'm sorry, it's just... I've been doing this for so freaking long. It's just that, you know, progression, and as you progress, and can progress. And I tell people all the time, I mean, in the idea of progression, if someone tells you that I can't slow down and I have to do this, then maybe you should go somewhere else, because the ideal of the situation, it's not about them. It's about you. And if you can't utilize that information, then what good is it? It's like having a personal trainer who... He's gone to college, he's gone to school, he knows all the information, he knows everything, but he can't communicate with people. Then the information inside of him is not worth anything if it can't be utilized. And it even works against him. Because
yeah, it's just like a lost file on a computer.
Yeah.
Hell, you got it, but you can't get it, so it ain't no good.
Yeah. But like I'm just saying, with the situation of finding theories and finding solutions, there's actually solutions on how to obtain that information, because like they said before, you're just like a computer, and we all know for a fact that if you have computers, you have to do a constant refragment and cleansing and the whole thing on your computer, because it basically stores everything it sees. Everything you pull up on a computer, it stores in that memory, and you have to take care of it. It's the same thing with the brain. And because I thought it was really wild when I saw that, because the guy said his brain was so small, millions of years ago, but now it's huge. And what's so funny about it? It's more dictated toward memory than anything. And we know for a fact by memory and focusing on those things, we have a tendency to improve on skills. We were sitting doing this one thing in martial arts where actually it was more efficient to practice visualizing it than it was physically doing it and being better at it. So we're finding out that the brain is more important than we ever thought of just almost anything and everything to improve and everything on the physical and the spiritual and tie the two together. And there had to be a reason for it and a reason why God did that. So all these techniques and everything else, pulling these things together and that kind of stuff. Because I was trying to tell everybody, I said, when I saw Atlantis and that kind of stuff, I saw masses of people doing these mass meditations and stuff. So, you know, we always have stragglers. We always have certain people that, you know, take a little bit longer to get to the masses and that kind of stuff. And Atlantis, in those kind of situations, wasn't any different. And the bigger you get, the harder it is to maintain a lot of things, too, as well. You just got to, because a lot of people, we've seen this in our culture, too. People hit the lottery. But for some reason, they can't snap their brains out of being poor. So they have a tendency to go out and buy things on credit, too. Even if they could go out and buy it right out. They're just kind of, like you said before, conditioned, and that's what they're taught. But
yeah, a lot of them end up blowing it all anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. They have that mentality of being poor. So they when you have a mentality and you're stuck in the idea of lack, you have a tendency to go out when you get big sums of money and you start buying everything up because you're scared. If you don't, the money's going to run out and you won't be able to get those things. Not realizing that at that moment it's a contradiction, because in the process of going into this spending spree, you're actually putting yourself in that position anyway. So we sit down and say, okay, guys, first of all, do you really need... That's what we were saying before. We focus and sit back and go, the idea of focusing on what one person wants, what do you really want? And you look at those people who actually go into debt and that kind of stuff, and you ask them later on with a situation, did you really want those things? And they find out that, no, they didn't want those things. It was just another way of keeping up with the Joneses. The people who hit the lottery, who have done the most efficiently utilized that money for the better, is the people who really focus on what was more important to them. And it wasn't the money. It was people, like with Michael Jackson and stuff, and donations and giving stuff to people and just giving to charity all the time. But in the same process, realizing that as in the process of giving, you also have to give the same thing to yourself. And these people are buying houses and boats and that kind of stuff. We're still looking for outside situations to make them happy. The people that took the money and really did something really good with it were the people that knew themselves. And they were comfortable in their own skins. So they didn't go out and spend all the money. They actually invested it and invested in themselves, starting businesses or improving on businesses and that kind of stuff. Or what one lady gave her brother a truck because he really needed it and that kind of stuff. But she really did things that she really wanted to do. She knew what she really wanted to do with the whole thing. And she had a nice little list.
Yeah,
I think it's
kind
of
good.
Yeah, and plus sometimes with the situations too, people having friends that alienated them and that kind of stuff. If you trace it back to source, the people that alienated them and the people who were thinking it, it was a manifestation of a fear, because the people who run the lottery were scared that people were not going to like them anymore, and that's what happened. So it's another thing of tracing it back to source. We can say, all those people don't like them anymore and they lost all their friends. I call it a selection. You know, what's more important? In some situations, some people have a tendency to fall to the wayside, people who really are your friends, they just stick with you through thick and thin and a whole bit, and they know who you are, and they, even if you do get a little arrogant and big-headed, they're still your friends, and they're the ones that usually slap you down, bring you back to reality. The ones who take off, they're just like you. They had fears of their own. So instead of letting the fears manifest, they took themselves out of the situation. not realizing that that's exactly what happened. They just manifested their fears into reality. So that's a crazy thing. Because I was sitting talking with a friend of mine about Atlantis and the Garden of Eden being one and the same. And I said, you look at Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve basically left the garden because it, if you look at people, how they are really down on themselves, and they, the one common denominator you see a lot with people is they don't feel worthy. They can't believe it. You know, why don't they go out and get what they want? How come they're not doing the careers they really want to? It's a lack of faith in themselves to even think about getting those things. So they have a tendency to compromise and that kind of stuff. And I've heard people say, you know, there's a guy for you, and they're going, oh no, he's not for me. And he's way out of my league. Or there's a job for you that you'd love to do. Oh, I'm not qualified for that. So I think in some sense of the world, you look at Adam and Eve. Did they really get kicked out of the garden, or did they leave because they felt like they wasn't worthy of all that greatness? And I said, if you look at society, that one makes more sense than being kicked out of the garden, doesn't it? I made a mistake. I did something I shouldn't have done, so therefore I'm not worthy, so therefore I should have compromised for the rest of my life. Let's go smack at him, huh?
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying there, but, I mean, how would they have come up the idea that they did wrong?
Well, that's true, but that's what I'm saying. When you were sitting there coming up with the theory about, you know, when we were talking about where the people come from,
yeah,
and where the concept they come up with, and all the situations of looking at the garden as being Atlantis, because there's a society there. It wasn't just three. It just wasn't two people, and then they had two kids. Because I read that thing over and over again. Because there's actually a part in the Bible where it says there's the first part before Adam is even created, where it says we make man in our image.
Right.
And then later on it says God made Adam from his own image. From his, you know, Adam is him.
But the Bible actually says we?
Yeah, it does. We make man in our likeness, I think it says. And then there's two. I'm just saying, if it didn't happen, if there's something that didn't happen twice, why is it written twice? And it's all in Genesis. And right after He basically made the universe, not just the earth, in 6 days. And then right after that, you have an insert where it says, we make man in our image. So see, man, it seems like, was already there. And see, it also says, there's not really any kind of indication of how long the garden's been there. It just says, He makes Adam from his own image, and he places him in the garden. So the garden, he places him in the garden. I should go back and read that again, but I don't really read a reference where it says he created the garden and then put Adam in the garden. Not in the same section, let's put it that way. And I don't remember seeing it anyway. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, okay? It is one of those ones I want to go back and look again, but I'm just saying it does say in the Bible that in certain sections it says, you know, tells Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply and be abundant and prosperous and go out and do the whole thing. So they're in the garden doing just that. So, and then the one section where the ideal of sinning, and actually I read the definition of what sin means is the lack of thinking and the lack of self. So therefore you feel like you need to find an outsource to make you happy. That's what people steal, because they feel if I steal something, it makes me happy because of the lack of what they got, the lack of self, of realizing he can actually just focus and actually attract and pull that to him. So it's a lack of. So we look at the garden and Adam and Eve and that kind of stuff, what's going on here. In some sense of the word, they're feeling a lack in self, so they felt like they were looking for outside sources to make them happy. It says Adam doesn't really talk about Adam a lot, but Adam did have a thing where he was depressed for a while before Eve came along. That's the reason Eve was basically created. And there's a lot of stories there too. We also have Lilith, was actually supposed to be the first wife of Adam, and then she was just too freaking independent, and she just got too crazy where she was actually being more. Because it's like some people say that Adam and Eve and Eve and Lilith, they've actually taken both stories in the Christian text and put them together. So you think it's one woman, when it's actually Lilith is the one that sinned, and Eve is the one that came in to be with Adam when he basically left the garden. So they came together because of circumstances, and Lilith was basically more on the, you know,
the
side.
So Lilith is the one that bit the apple, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And even with, I always tell people, it wasn't a freaking apple, but it was the fruit of the tree. And, you know, the fruit of the tree could have been, I mean, most people would say, you know, when we think about it, realistically, and what we're familiar with, it was either an apple or a peach, you know, but we have lemons and oranges and stuff that come from trees. But, you know, people don't think about those things. They think about those in Florida and places like that, but not really a combination of both. Because you don't hear about oranges and lemons in the Middle East. But you don't. I mean, one thing that drove me crazy too, because if you're sitting there going to trace it back to the Garden of Eden being in Africa, I don't remember hearing anything about apple trees either.
Well, maybe at that time there was. I mean, I know there ain't much there now, but I mean, mm-hmm. the way the Earth changes over the.
Oh yeah, because they were talking about the Sphinx and everything like that being over 25,000 years old, which would put it where, because they were talking about the weather damage, rain and stuff that's on the wall on the outside and the Sphinx itself, that it was actually a lot of vegetation there and grass and that kind of stuff, which was basically when they put the history together was about 25,000 years ago. But it also puts it in the heyday, too, of a lot of things that can be part of why did the Atlanteans know to go to Egypt and why and certain places on the planet, right? Why did they go to these certain places? Because I feel like as Atlantis as a whole and having these outposts, they were very familiar with those areas because there was also a theory, too, that says that at one point the Egyptians were just wandering in the desert. Next thing you know, something intersected with their culture that influenced them and motivated them to build this great empire. And it's the same thing when you look at the Mayas, the Incas, and all these other things. If you trace it back to the source of when they were before their greatness, they were basically bands of people wandering wherever they were going. They were just traveling from place to place. All of a sudden, it's the same thing with the Aztecs. The Aztecs were wandering. Wandering the plains for a long time too as well. And this one guy, I guess it was supposed to be where as soon as they saw an eagle on a tree limb devouring a snake, that's where they were supposed to set up roots, which was also done by a seer. Now most of the seers, like when I sit here, and I don't know if you heard one of my shows, but I was talking about Khufu, and my show is basically based on the Atlantean who built the Great Pyramid. You know, who wants to know about the great Atlantean who built the Great Pyramid, which was Khufu. And Khufu was a person that was very powerful. This man really exhibited a lot of things. And if you ever sit there and study the way he became Pharaoh, he was an Egyptian. he supposedly was some kind of, I don't know what you, he was just a wandering person who wandered through the desert. He fell asleep under the Sphinx, dreamed that one day he would become a great pharaoh, and he wasn't even of royal blood, as they put it, but he became the pharaoh who actually built the Great Pyramid. And the more I focus on the situation, the reason I did the show is because the vision I got of Khufu, actually, because I actually did a couple of past lives with people who were actually part of building the Great Pyramid. But every time I would do these past lives with them, I never saw them actually, per se, working on the pyramid. I've done a lot of past life readings with people who are constantly doing the chiseling, working, always being around the Great Pyramid, but I never saw anybody working on and putting these blocks in the Great Pyramid. So I started focusing on it even more and came up with this vision, and I saw Khufu sitting there, using his telepathic powers to put these blocks into place. And he built the Great Pyramid. Basically, he had everybody working on the blocks, chiseling and that kind of stuff, putting them all together. And then there's a great temple that was right across from the Great Pyramid, too. So yeah, I did see some people working, some past life readings I did, where they were working on that, chiseling, copper chisels and that kind of stuff. I'm like, gosh, you know something? A great culture. Why the hell would you use copper? If you could find these great stones, why couldn't you find some steel? You know?
Yeah, copper won't don't chisel steel too well.
It does, but it takes you like years. And they were doing a mathematic thing on the whole thing. It says basically the hieroglyphics and that kind of thing. How they built the Great Pyramid and sliding these things into place with masses of men and that kind of thing. And I'm like, they tallied it up because it said that somewhere in the hieroglyphs it took 28 years to build the Great Pyramid. And they started doing the math on it and started realizing that if that's the case, you were sliding a block in place every 2 minutes. So we know for a fact from the hieroglyphics and the picture they put on there that it took longer than 2 minutes to pull a block into place. And even to this day, there's still theories. There's like three theories on how they even did it in the first place. And every time you do one of these theories, there's a lot of masses of men working on this whole thing. And I did see one section where I was focusing on that, where I seen 300,000 guys, people working on this. But I didn't see any slaves working on it. I saw that these were people, they were Egyptians. They were proud to be a part of this whole thing. But they were always in the distance looking at what was going on in the process. You see the Great Pyramid, but you don't see people working on it. But you see the Great Pyramid gradually every day, like getting taller, bigger. And some of the masses of stones that were put into place and the precise way they were done. Sure, I'm pretty sure there were some techniques in doing that, but using your telepathic powers to slide these things into place, and you use your mental powers, your focus, and your eye to look at these things, seems a whole lot more practical. And plus the vision I saw that in the hieroglyphics they have paintings and that kind of stuff telling you how they did the pyramids. At the same time, Khufu's, all the stuff that was done about Khufu disappeared. The only piece they've ever found that represents him or anything that he even existed was a little statue about 2 to 3 inches tall. And some people say he's actually the one that refaced the Sphinx and that kind of stuff, because it used to be a lion's head. And I've even gotten to the point where I would like to go over there and find another one, because I feel like the Egyptians always built those Sphinx in two, not just one. And the way it is on that great plateau right there, you just look at it and you're like, you just feel like the other one's missing. They haven't found it. And they've actually even said the Sphinx that's there now has been unearthed at least 4 or 5 times because the sands keep burying it. That's why it still exists. Whoa.
Well, because the sands protected it.
Okay. Yeah, because I was sitting looking over too, and I said, I see Khufu do this. And see, the thing I saw was, in great detail, Khufu did this and he died. Because he died of an aneurysm because of overexerting himself to do this, because he was an arrogant man, very powerful, and the idea I saw his sons were very disappointed because of his abilities, and Egyptians had great abilities. They taught to their sons, their kids, and that kind of stuff, and it went down generation to generation. Well, Khufu basically did his little self in, wasn't able to pass it on to his sons. That's why you see these smaller pyramids. But even with those pyramids, there's something about them that just is just not on the grand structure as the big one. And I was there talking to a friend of mine too, and I said, you know the guy in the Bible? They call him the dreaming prophet. What's his name?
Daniel?
No. This is a guy who used to dream. He became very important in the Egyptian world. He was sold into slavery by his 7 brothers.
Oh.
Joseph?
I don't know.
Anyway.
I couldn't even guess.
Well, the reason I bring it up to you is because the idea is Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. And the way it worked out was they went home and told their father he died, that he was killed and went over a cliff and that kind of stuff. And it was the father's favorite child too, as well. But he had a knack for dreaming. He could interpret dreams. And so he was working for this one Egyptian. The Egyptian came in, came like a servant in the house. He was a slave, and he was very good at what he did. This Egyptian really appreciated this whole thing. The guy would call, guy accomplished a lot of things. But then his wife wanted him because she fell in love with him. And then Joseph didn't want nothing to do with her because he had a lot of respect for his, you know, for his master, as he put it. So he wouldn't go there. Well, she decided to say that he did. Since he wouldn't give her what she really wanted, she was going to take everything from him too. So she told her husband that he had forced himself on her and that kind of stuff, and a lot of situations are going on, and Joseph was thrown in jail. He was thrown in prison. Well, let's put it this way, he was thrown in the dungeon. That's what we call it. So he was thrown in the dungeon and that kind of stuff, and in the process of the whole thing, he just had this really strong faith that things were going to work out and things happened for a reason. And he went through the whole format. And then two people got thrown into prison with him in these places. One was a cook for the Pharaoh, and the other one was a, I think he was a guard of the Pharaoh, I'm not sure. They were two different people, and they both had dreams that were really whacked out. And so Joseph told the guy who was the cook that he was going to lose his head. Lose his head, and he was going to go back to work, and something was going to happen. He was going to lose his head, and he wouldn't go anywhere, and that's what's going to happen in his life, and that's what he's dreamed, because the guy had dreamed about, had a wild dream. And then the other guy who had the dream, I might have these reversed too, I'm just saying, one was good, one was bad. One guy went back and got his position back and more, and had great success, and the other guy lost his head. And everybody in the dungeon were kind of like freaked out about the whole thing, because it happened just the way he said it was, through the dreams and stuff. So the Pharaoh himself was having dreams, and he couldn't understand what the dreams were all about. And he went to all the seers and that kind of stuff, and he just wasn't ever satisfied with what they were coming up with. And even some of the seers he went to told him they had no idea what it meant. So then he heard about Joseph and his dreaming, so he summoned for Joseph to come up here and tell him what the dreams meant. And Joseph came up there, and the guy told him this is what the dream is all about. And the guy looked at him and goes, "Oh, that says basically what's going to happen is Egypt's going to go through a great 7 years of prosperity, and it's just one of those things to learn how to use those 7 years, because there's going to be seven terrible years after that. But the dreams are basically saying that you can overcome that by organizing right now with what you accomplished in the first 7 years." And so the Pharaoh says, "Okay, how can we do that?" And basically he came up with a way of, he also came up with ways to irrigate. He was very good at that kind of thing, irrigating and that kind of stuff. And Egypt had a lot of prosperity, that kind of stuff, in that situation. And even that parts of Egypt are still green because of it, because of the irrigation and stuff that was introduced to that whole thing. So that one, it's kind of hard to sneeze at, because there's actually evidence of that one. And then plus he helped the Pharaoh and everything else, not just store grain, but came up with ways to grow, like what I'm saying before, irrigation and stuff. That's why they say you can see irrigation and that kind of stuff, because the idea of actually storing grain, trying to store enough grain for 7 years to get through 7 years, that's kind of impossible in some sense of the word, without getting some kind of contamination, you know?
Yeah, so, that and rodents and...
So they feel like that Joseph was more than just helping him to figure out how to do that, but also helped him to figure out with the irrigation to actually grow and to not just take those 7 years as just taking them as for bad. Was actually able to divert those things and turn those into positives as well. And I think that's what it was. So I was sitting there going over this whole thing, and I watched this on the Discovery Channel one night, and they said, "How would you feel that if this is one insert in the Bible that you could actually have evidence that it did exist?" I mean, you do have Ramses. Ramses does exist, but people don't realize that there's actually four pharaohs with the Ramses name. They're descendants and stuff, but there's just not one Pharaoh named Ramses. It was actually the Ramses we're talking about that was supposed to have the confront with Moses. It was actually Ramses IV.
So they were all from the same family.
Right, they were all from the same family, but the way they do it in the freaking Ten Commandments, they don't, you know, Ramses comes up as being Ramses. And his father was something else. I can't remember what his name and father's was, but his father died. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, his son actually has something to do with that. Anyway, there's actually a pyramid that was built in Egypt for Joseph. The Egyptians don't talk about it very often because, you know, it kind of takes, if you really do a lot of the history and a lot of things that the Egyptians are trying to tell you that exist, you can really feel like they're hiding something. Almost like they're scared to death you're going to find the truth. They're always there at every dig. They're always there to tell you what they're all about, and their mouths start running just as soon as you find some kind of discovery. Well, what that means is it does it in a, they're definitely trying to keep that mystic about the whole thing just the way they want it. And I was sort of telling my friend, I said, I've seen the hieroglyphs about how they built the pyramids and stuff, and I said, it just feels like someone's trying to convince me of something. And we saw the things where they had the light bulbs, and I said, imagine, how can you sit here and say that Egyptians did have electricity and knew what it was all about when you find these clay batteries? They must have knew something about the whole thing.
Because yeah.
They created batteries, and the first thing I was thinking about, yes, you can create energy, but why would you make a big old pot and make a big one? Why not a small one? There was some really big batteries. So you just figure having big batteries, and I mean, we were also talking about alchemy. We're talking about, you know, people think that alchemy and changing minerals, you know, taking lead to turn it to gold is impossible. I said, look at the situation about Egyptians. Do you hear about Egyptians actually going off and digging and mining for gold? Or do you just hear about them having it, you know? And sure, they used to do their little they're going off on trips and that kind of stuff. But it seemed like they had more gold than what they actually obtained on these trips and stuff. And I was like, could it be possible? Because there are a lot of connections with alchemy being traced back to Egyptian. I was actually reading some information to Da Vinci, and Da Vinci did a lot of alchemy stuff. But he did a lot of his techniques that he said he got back from an ancient seer that was traced back to Egypt. And I said, that kind of makes sense to me because they used to have, I mean, almost everything they had something to do with gold. I mean, and some of the things they put together, and like the coffins that King Tut was put in, that kind of stuff, a lot of things that they did and put together, even if they had the pulleys and that kind of stuff, you just don't see the evidence of them doing that. I mean, look at King Tut when they found that freaking tomb. They seen that tomb robbers had gotten close, but didn't complete and ransack that one, which was proof because when they got into the whole thing, the reason it was so great about King Tut was it was untouched. It had not been touched by anybody except for the last person that walked out of that place before they sealed it up. So there was some nice curses put on there to keep those people out, and it worked. But it was also one of the greatest discoveries ever found because of. It really gave him a lot, just not with the gold and how much the expense of the whole thing. It was the ideal of all the tech. It filled in a lot of the gaps about Egyptians and stuff like that. It was like one example, they found when they did Pompeii, they were looking at surrounding cities and how this volcano and the eruption, that kind of stuff, affected other cities that were 10 miles away and that kind of stuff. And they went to Herculaneum, I think it's called, which is about 10 miles from Pompeii. And when they got there, they'd excavated the whole place and never found a skeleton or nothing. So they just felt like they must have had some kind of maybe had some technology, but they definitely had a warning that this was going to happen. So they felt like they took off. Well, what they found out later on was they kept on digging. They started digging under the structures that they were finding. That's when they would find these mass graves. And what was going on was when the volcano erupted, the first thing that happens is you have ash and that kind of stuff. So these people didn't realize that by hiding underneath the buildings and hoping this would all go by, that the ash that came down was so thick and stuff, it basically smothered everybody. And then everything happened from there on out. But it was actually the very first time in this process of finding these mass graves, there were also Romans here. And up to that point, they had never found a Roman because Romans they cremate their dead. And so this was the very first time they found a Roman in full uniform, swords and everything, the whole bit, sandals and everything. So it kind of filled in the gaps and everything for them. And then not just that one, but when they went to Pompeii, they were doing their excavation on that one too, and they were finding these mounds of dirt. And this guy says every time he breaks in one of these mounds of dirt, he finds skeletons, finds bones. So the guy said, I have a theory. He says, next time you find one of these mines, one of these mounds, don't do anything. Just come to me and show and tell me where it's at, okay? The guy goes, okay, no problem. He says, I got a theory. I know what this is all about. So they started finding these mounds everywhere. And so what he did, he took one of these mounds and kind of punched a hole in it, but didn't get into it, and poured plaster Paris into these things. Okay, he put plaster Paris in each one of these mounds they found, and then gave it a couple hours, let it harden up, and then they uncovered it. What they found was the ash buried the people, and then after years and years and years, these mounds were actually people, and the mounds were left because of the flesh rotted away. And left the bones, but the dirt and everything was over top of these things over years, you know, over thousands and thousands of years, left these mounds. So when they poured the plaster Paris into these mounds, they actually had an idea what these people looked like. Because when they poured the plaster Paris in the whole thing, it basically the plaster replaced the flesh that was on the bones in the first place.
The cavity, yeah.
Yeah, so they basically had an idea what these people looked like, the plaster Paris casting. I thought that was kind of cool. It was really good that this guy, you know, saw what he, you know, went basically followed his theory, what he had here. That was a good one. Because a lot of people don't do that. They just kind of like bow over the whole thing.
Yep.
Because we had the same problem here in Ohio where they started finding these mounds and didn't realize it was actually from an ancient culture, Indian culture that lived here before the Shawnee showed up. But there was another culture too that crucified that's the Romans, cremated their dead. So that was another thing too. It was kind of hard to take care of and deal with the situation. And like I tell people all the time, I'm not trying to debunk anything, but I like to get the whole truth. So there's been a couple of places I've been, and I've kind of told people this is what I see. We have a place here in town called the Castle Inn, and it's actually a real castle that was built. And each brick was brought here from England. It's actually a castle that was built here back in the early 1800s. And I went to go, and I actually had a chance to go up and go to that place. And it's a bed and breakfast now, but I called them up and said, I'd like to take a look at your establishment. I have a paranormal group, and I just want to check the whole thing out. So they let me come in there. And the first thing I saw was they had a notebook on the table in the living room of supposedly ghosts, pictures of ghosts and that kind of stuff. And they didn't like me the people that were here, the innkeepers at the time, did like me, but I don't think the owner does. Because I told her, I said, you know something, all those pictures in that freaking book, except for the last one, which was the one that I took in the garden, they're fakes. And they're fabricated. And she's like, and the innkeeper was like, what do you mean?
Huh.
I said, I look at the pictures, they're upside down for one, but they also, every time I look at them, I always picture somebody holding a picture up, and the picture's reflecting off the camera lens as they're taking the picture. And she was like, really? I said, yeah, because I've looked at pictures before and spirits and that kind of stuff.